kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
Ball squad, ball squad. Shoot for the skill shot, it's a house ball. Ball squad, ball squad. Shoot the green like a mock jackpot. Mike is the simulator, Mel is the sin. Show with the milky voice, image the U buffet. Ball squad, ball squad. With a ball squad.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe, joining as usual, Cole. Cole, how are you doing today?
I'm cold.
Why?
The fuck is this shit? It's snowing.
Well, it is, you know, it's getting close to winter time. That's going to happen.
Did I already out the guests with a funny joke?
We have multiple guests joining us right now.
Didn't I? Well, that's some segue right there. We're professionals, Joe. Look at that.
Yeah, it's only been 6 years.
Yay!
One of these days I'll get my shit together. But also joining us, Pernell Vaughn. Pernell, how are you doing?
Fuck, it's cold! It's raining outside. What is that about?
No, it's not that cold if it's just raining. Talk to me when you got snow and sleet and shit.
Oh, I'm joking. I don't even want that stuff. I'm like here, people getting like winter kicking their asses. We barely got past Thanksgiving and it's already getting snow droppings. I'm like, look outside. It's a bit of rain. We had a bit of flooding and I just counted my blessings the whole time. Like it could have been worse.
Oh, geez.
Could be frost. Floating down a river in your driveway. So, you know, oh, I've been there before too.
Oh, Lord. And then our actual guest, hopefully I say this right, Adam Ferrando?
Yeah, Ferrando. That works. Thank you.
How's the weather with you? Are you cold, too?
I haven't left the house today, so I'm not sure if we got snow today. I don't think so. I think it's just rain. But no, I've been warm, so no. It's New England.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be cold up there, too.
So. Yeah, we're gonna get it. Don't worry.
So the name of this episode is We Are All Fucking Freezing.
Fucking cold.
I remembered it prior to this conversation. I'm glad that it inspired it.
So, Adam, you are here to talk about your game Demon's Tilt on Steam. For the people who don't know what this game is, give us the sales pitch.
Yep, sure. Demon's Tilt is a video pinball game. It's a 2D, we're calling it a 2D action pinball title. So a lot of the stuff you see out there is like Pin Sim. It's simulation, it's 3D, it's based on real games. This is more of a throwback to a very specific kind of sprite-based, fast-paced pinball, but with kind of modern multi-ball and scoring and some effects that we get. Some 3D, a little bit, some meshes and stuff. But it's mostly a 2D action pinball title. Yes.
Action pinball is a very good way to describe it. This is a fast-paced, crazy game.
Yeah, we were saying it has some kind of, there's a bit of shmup that we're borrowing and a bit of hack and slash. So there's like a combo system and lots of pink bullets like you'll see in shmups and stuff. So it's pretty, leaning hardcore. For sure.
Bullet hell pinball.
Yeah, we found that it might be a controversial, the bullet hell with the shmup. I don't know, they like shmup, they like STG, and bullet hell is our kind of marketing thing, but then we actually are pretty hardcore about the shmup elements we borrow. It's not just an aesthetic thing. We do a lot of things with the scoring too. A lot of cave inspired.
Go ahead, Pernell.
I actually was curious to correct. I did dabble a little bit in it thus far, leading up to when we review it preview it next week. But what would you say are some inspiration that you had in the design of the game? Because I had a feeling that I wanted to ask you.
Sure. I mean, there is an obvious NaxatSoft TurboGrafx inspiration.
Yeah,
for sure. Devil's Crush being that game, it's a very special, special enough to want to do a kind of tribute to it for sure. And hopefully we succeed in that. Yeah. We love the Crush series. We love Kazuya Pinball, the Saturn games. All of those are arcade pinball games. Big fans of.
Much appreciated there. And I'm glad to hear, because I was like, you know, it's the elephant in the room but I just wanted to hear you say it.
yeah, we kind of, well, we can't keep people from saying it, like, on social media. I mean, it's obvious, like, that is the main inspiration for this title, so not shy about that at all.
Imagine if I asked that question and your response was, well, I was a big fan of Revenge of the Gator, so I was going for some of that.
Oh, yeah. Revenge of the Gator, I actually didn't get to play. Played Kirby, but hadn't played Revenge of the Gator. I think I need to give that. That's on the list of to play.
I'm just saying, Boat Kirby was my first, like, video pinball game that really drew me in. Like, I was obsessed with Kirby's Pinball Land. It was a fantastic game, which actually brings up a second question. This is more just of a yes or no sort of thing. Clearly, I'm getting used to how the game is designed and how it's laid out. Sure. So I'm not very good at it yet, so I might have missed this. Are there any subtables in this game by chance?
That is not answered yet. If you mean, like, if there's bonus tables or, like, a bonus, like, bonus rounds?
Yeah, probably like in Kirby, how every once in a while you might say, well, yes, put Kirby's mouth and go to a second little side area for, like, bonus points.
So right now, as in entering early access, we haven't said yes or no to having bonus stages. The reason being, from the start, I was super into getting, like, a full table multi-ball. Mm-hmm. And if I had gone thinking bonus stages first, I think the design would be very different. It would almost be like, oh, we could just corral multi-ball into this one thing and not really have to worry about it. So I'm glad I was able to do multi-ball on the three tiers. And then now we can think about, you know, what that means for bonus rooms. So it's still open, and likely there'll be something like that. Yeah.
That's actually a very interesting concept too, because I can say I had like a two-tier like process when I was going into this game. So there was a point where I got my first multi-ball, and it felt almost overwhelming to me.
Yeah.
And stuff. And then it actually kind of clicked for me, like, the logic behind this pinball game, and you can let me know if I'm kind of off base here or not, but
sure.
It's a 3D pinball game with a lot of moving parts going on, but at its core, it's still meant to be viewed as kind of like if you were playing a pinball machine, which means that you kind of have to see all that's going on and work it as best you can, because it's supposed to be chaotic, because it's pinball.
So the game does exist in, like, one state, like a machine does, so, like, a lot of the things are fixtures in the playfield, so it's not like there's, like, a progression where it's levels that you're going through. Everything has to exist in the table, almost like it's rooted as a table. Like, it's not real, it can't be real, because it'd be like as long as, like, two coffee tables put together. we are thinking of it as, like, you know, like a machine, like a clockwork mechanism with a lot of smaller mechanisms, like, it intertwined and working at once. So it does get a little hectic, and I guess we're working to make sure that balance is right, so that way it's like the warm bath rather than just hitting you like a train. But a train's good too.
What made you go with such a huge table?
That was just something from Crush that I really liked, was the three tiers. So it was things like that I thought needed to be there. And then after those kind of things anchored the kind of design of the game, then I kind of strayed off of that. But I felt like I really needed that verticality of the three tiers. So I'm describing to your listeners, but it's like three mid-sized tables stacked on top of each other, kind of like, I guess, the back glass of a Banzai Run or something like that. Something like those three levels, and then, you know, the player is working their way up them, and then the most dangerous area, you know, is at the bottom where most of the action is taking place.
Not lying about that, by the way. God, it's stressful when you're in the bottom set.
Yeah, I think what we found is, like, well, it's the only place I could actually kill the player. So I have to, like, kind of make it a little difficult and tune it to be difficult, or else it would just be a breeze. So, it does try and do some things to you. For sure.
Anytime I'm in the bottom instead of in the middle or the top, I'm shitting bricks. Just please, God, let me find a way to get back up top. Please let me find a way to get back
up. And if you played a lot of the Turbo graphics title or Devil's Crest, then you know that castle shot was just, if you shoot that, you always get a plug in the drain. So there's something like that there, but it's not as free, you know, it's not a guarantee. So,
I'm ashamed to admit I'm not as familiar with the Turbo graphics games. I was more of an NES guy growing up. So NES pinball was my jam.
The Iwata. Yeah. That one I bought, my cousin was selling his games and he sold it for $5.
Nice.
Along with Bayou Billy and, Bayou Billy and Load Runner, yeah, those were the three. Those were the cheapest ones he was selling. And obviously, you know, Load Runner was shocking because I had never played anything like it. And Bayou Billy was just, well, Bayou Billy.
Bayou Billy, funny enough, I remember hearing about it and not playing it, but then Captain N did a good job of educating me on how
selling it
could be. It was like the only game he couldn't beat, apparently, in the show. It was a surprising little mythos.
Yeah, it was pretty bad, and it was the first time I swore out loud as a kid. And my mom heard me, and she walked over and like unplugged the NES and said,
"You know, I'm what's so what the hell are you? Oh, I'm playing Bob Billy."
Yeah. It's like 30 hits to like down one guy in that beat 'em up section.
You guys were talking about the size of the table and how large it is and how not all of it's visible on the screen at once. Mm-hmm. There was a question on the Steam forums about vertical support. Has there been any update on that possibly being a feature that could come to the game?
Yes. When is this airing?
It'll be out on Wednesday.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Unless you need it later, then I can hold it for a week or two.
No. It's Tate mode is something that we both wanted, me and Ralph. Ralph is the other person working on the game, by the way, Ralph. Mm-hmm. It's something we want. So, yes, it's something we're working on. Hey. But as soon as we get it to where we want it, then we can formally, I guess I'm kind of formally saying that, but yes.
Breaking news right here on the show. Yeah. I asked the hard question.
Could I turn my monitor sideways?
Didn't expect that from the squeaky voice one, did you?
Well, yeah, people want it. I mean, and I understand because you could play it horizontal, but it's pretty cool vertical. Yeah. It's like a spectacle. Yeah,
videos that I've seen of it seem like it would just suit. I always see people with their monitor's portrait in their setups, and I just don't understand why. And then I saw this game, and I was like, "That's why."
Yeah.
I mean, since Ikaruga had that option in there, where it's like, "Boy, I could never do this practically with like this huge tube TV." It's just been something that you're just like, that is fucking just cool to have as an option. People.
I've actually gone to like house gatherings and seen people with their Dreamcast and their TVs tilted sideways and just kind of like wonder, like, is that safe for the television set? And they just clearly don't care.
Yeah, it's gotta be. Yeah, I'm sure it's fine.
I mean, vertical mode is becoming so much more popular lately with the Switch. I'm sure I'm jumping the gun on this, but do you guys have any kind of console plans or Switch plans for the game?
Yeah,
we got him looking at his calendar, Joe.
Yeah, I don't think we've made it a secret that we want to be on console, and that. But we've said before we want to be on console. We just need to do the early access thing first, and do the PC thing first.
Well, I can, based my personal experience, I can almost bet that. Well, right now I'm already. I mean, I have a feeling I'm going to already like it more than I already do when it comes time to do the full on preview set, but. Based on how I originally even learned about the game and what I know about like Devil's Crush, I feel like if this game hits consoles, it would do pretty well. Because there's definitely a market for this kind of sleeping right now. It's like, oh, that game's out. I remember that game. It's inspired, but I want to play that.
Yeah. I mean, it's like from our marketing point of view, we know that, like, we know the kind of game we're making. Like, the median playtime is like 3 to 15 minutes. Like, some people might have a really long game, but I like that kind of short experience, like, between other things. And so it's like, yeah, for sure. And that value price that we're going to hit, I mean, it's just, we want to, how do I put it? People tend to like lump it in as like a casual thing, but it's like, it's not. Just because it's like, just because the playtime isn't long, it doesn't mean the experience isn't like a hardcore experience. So we definitely run up to, I guess, when dealing with business types, I guess they have a hard time positioning and seeing, you know, what this is exactly. I think they're maybe a little used to like the long Metroidvania-ish, you know, indie pixel game is like this very, just this like long form, bit of a more of a narrative experience. Yeah.
Which kind of blows my mind, though, because, I mean, nowadays, at least with, like, say, for example, the Switch Marketplace, you got all kinds of random stuff on that system. Like, if it exists, it's probably out there somewhere. And furthermore, pinball, not even referring to, like, your game or video pinball, just pinball, period, has always been about skill and, a lot of times, quick deaths. Like, if you're not nailing down the pinball machine when you get on it, you're going to be out of your balls within 3 to 5 minutes. But if you nail down how to, like, you know, the pocket shots, where to, like, pretty much where to send the ball, regularly to keep it in motion without having to worry about being at the bottom, you can be on there for, like you said, 10, 20 minutes easy if you get to that skill level. So,
yeah. I mean, and we, like, I love the video genre, and I also, like, know it as a handheld thing, too, like Pokemon Pinball and this kind of car ride genre, or commuter genre. And then also what I like, actually, is, like, playing windowed mode and just having something in windowed mode and coming back to it. I really like that kind of experience. I don't, you know, other people are going to play it their own way, I'm sure, but I don't mind this kind of, some people call it coffee break style games.
So what he is clearly saying, folks, is that this will be a game that you can hide in your office.
Yeah, yes, exactly. Between a few spreadsheets, just hop in.
Your boss comes in, wonders why the hell one of your monitors is vertical out of nowhere.
Like, damn, what happened? I meant to put some instead of date diff. I'm sorry. Pardon my language.
For me personally, we got pausing in relatively recently, and so I hadn't been able to, like, window it previously, but now that I have, like, I just remember having a game going and coming back to it, I'm like, oh, this is great. This is exactly what I want. I want pause. Why didn't I put pause in at the beginning?
Well, you only have yourself to blame.
Yeah.
Out of curiosity, just random question, outside of, you know, pinball and the like, what would you say are some of, like, let's say, like, your random top three games?
My tops are Diablo 2, SimCity on Super Nintendo, Tetris. I like Tetris.
Nice.
And then it's like, from there, it's like, I also like really, really glitzy AAA stuff, like Uncharted 4, Bloodborne, this kind of stuff, like narrative. Like, I especially like hand-holdy, linear AAA stuff, like, especially like Uncharted House, just like a straight line. I just like it a lot. But yeah,
just tell me where to go and what to shoot, and I'm good.
Yeah. So it's like two ends of the spectrum, I guess. But yeah, Diablo 2, that's that game that I probably sunk the most time into.
And buddy Chris would love you for saying that, by the way.
Which one? Uncharted?
Not Diablo.
Diablo 2. Yeah.
Yeah, the game was everything for me. Like, first online-ish kind of experience. Yeah, it's the best.
Well, since you brought up Diablo, I'm going to ask you, what do you think of Diablo Immortal?
Yeah, I played vanilla Diablo 3. Played through it once, but it's just not the same game to me. It's great, but something about just where I was in high school at that time, which is, that game just means so much to me. And also, I could play it now and love it as a single player game. So no feelings for Immortal. I'll check out Path of Exile. I haven't played that one yet. I
haven't played that yet. I think that's pretty nice. Okay. So I feel like I might be fortunately in the minority because I've seen like article titles about, you know, how Diablo Immortal's not faring well in the public and whatnot, but I know nothing about it. In fact, right now, the way my brain perceives it, it is a CG movie that Blizzard is creating in the Diablo universe. And I just kind of left it there.
You'll be able to like catch up on a super cut later on YouTube and just watch that through.
Good enough.
I don't know what they even put much money in this movie at all. It just seems like a bunch of cutscenes lumped together.
Yeah, I guess so.
What is this movie? It is so short.
Oh, Lord. Bringing it back to pinball, what are some of your favorite pinball games that are out there? Are you more of a simulation fan, like a Pinball Arcade, or are you more of the arcade-style fan, like Zen Pinball and the Crush series, obviously?
I'll happily say that Pinball Arcade is like responsible for introducing me into pinball proper. Like, I grew up with it in my periphery, but I guess I'm part of the third gen or wave of this new wave of pinball fans. And that started in 2000. Well, before I made Crush, Tilt.
don't edit that. Just imagine how cool it is. Like, that is like, Matt, I was the guy.
I'm a fan of the table rules, and of course I like the imagination stuff that Zen does. I don't know if I feel either way. I guess for home game, like sitting down on the console, it makes more sense to play the video version to me. Like, I'll play the Kaze Saturn games or Turbo. Other than that, like physical tables, I like Twilight Zone, definitely my favorite. World Cup Soccer, the news, not so new, the Stern Star Trek. Those tables. Fans, fan of.
I have a question, actually.
Go ahead, Bernal.
It's just a thought that I had. I mean, I haven't even played it yet, so if you haven't, I totally understand that for sure. But have you tried that one game that came out recently called, I guess, like Yoku's Island Express?
Oh, I played that.
No, haven't played that one.
My understanding, it is a pinball, is a platformer slash pinball game.
Yeah. It is. I hear it's quite good, too.
Yeah, it is.
So that's good for us if it did well. That's great. I think Ralph has played that one. He definitely also tries them all out. Played that Rulers of the Realm. Played that weird GameCube Odama game.
Oh, God.
Range.
Friggin' Odama. I forgot about that game.
Yeah, I know it as the giant pyramid of unsold copies at, like, The Wiz or... wherever, that's how I know it.
I know it because it has like a really weird like ending song to it that I came across a couple of months ago. It's just stuck in my head.
And also, well, it has
a microphone, didn't it?
Yeah, it came with you need a microphone to play it.
And you could, weren't you able to use the Donkey Konga drums with it as well, if I remember? Right.
That I don't know. I just know the microphone, if I'm not mistaken, was meant to yell orders to troops. Mm-hmm.
So you won't have to ask Ralph for microphone and conga drum support.
I guess conga drums wouldn't make sense because it would probably manipulate the flippers.
That's true. Conga
drum. So drum support is coming to Demon's Tilt, confirmed.
Yeah. Thanks, Ralph. Like gun support, yes. Keep it coming, guys. Just
gun con support is coming to Demon's Tilt.
But you have to use two light guns, one for each trigger.
Well, we, We've had people try and figure out, I don't know if he's been successful yet, but a arcade stick control scheme. He's from the Schwab community, so he's down with the stick. And I was like, eh, if you could figure it out, that'd be great. As far as just ergonomics and like, okay, not sure how you do nudge control, but...
That's a dance pad is something I'd almost perceive someone throwing out there just because they want to do everything with a dance pad these days.
Yes. I had a neighbor, like, first night in at a new place, and they were playing DDR in, like, 2014? No, 20, just way beyond when you'd think someone would be playing DDR.
Oh, that game is still bounding. I don't know how it's still kicking. I'm glad it's kicking, but it shocks the living daylights out of me. And I think a few months ago, someone beat, didn't they beat Dark Souls 3 with a dance pad?
Please.
I'm sure they did. I wouldn't be shocked at this point in time.
Just mind-boggling stuff. Like, where did he even, does he even have enough buttons on the dance pad to play Demon Soul or Dark Souls? Someone figured it out.
Just parry enough and you're good.
They beat the, oh yeah, they did beat the final boss. I was going to say, I saw where they, a video, because I Googled it, because that's what I do when I'm sitting here being quiet. Dark Souls 3 was beaten on a dance pad, indeed. But it looks like it was about 2 years ago.
Ah.
So you're a little late on that in Pernell.
Maybe it was
the shit together, Pernell.
You gotta get with the times, man. You
gotta get with the googs.
I don't know what that means. I'm old.
Talking, get off my lawn,
stare back. I'm gonna go Google that. You know what? I need to start playing shit with a dance pad. That way I can use my cane. And then I have an extra.
Three leg style.
Just start like randomly pushing buttons on the DDR pad with my cane. Be like, I fucking win everything.
Oh my God.
Oh my Lord. What is wrong with us?
Sorry. Well, for
so Adam, how long has this game been in the works?
Quite a while. 2016 is when I started in earnest. Yeah. So 2016, and worked on it for long stretches, some breaks in between, but then this year is when Ralph joined, so that way we can do the kind of final push to make it a commercial product. Yeah, so 3 years or more. Yeah.
Oh my God. It's almost like he was inspired by that guy who beat Dark Souls with the DDR pen.
Yeah, at that moment I knew this is
don't let your dreams be dreams.
Is this your first game?
Yeah, it's my first commercial title. Yeah, I did like game jams and prototypes, and in a previous part of my work, I was doing like illustrations for mobile card games and stuff, and then just became way more interested in doing game design stuff as soon as someone showed me Unity. And they themselves were an artist, and they were showing me what they were doing with the engine. And I said, well, I guess this is what I'm doing now. So yeah, that's when I got serious about doing game stuff. Yeah, but before that it was, illustration. My background is art and design. And before that I was doing toy concepts for toy industry. So yeah, it's been a road of, you know, all sorts of just anything fun I want to be working and doing, anything related to the art side of that. Yeah.
That's a pretty interesting jump to go from designing kids' toys to
demonic paintball.
Yeah. Demonic, satanic imagery.
What are you talking about?
It was hand in hand. Children and demons are just friendly.
It's true. Can't confirm.
Out of curiosity, like if you, like once this game is all done, I mean, we might be talking, I might be jumping well ahead of the gun here, but once this game is done, what do you think maybe some other gameplay styles that you want to consider attempting?
Well, I'm feeling this right now. Well, if you want to jump way forward, stuff I'd like to work on, I want to do a city builder one day. That's something I want to do. I like SimCity. I like SimCity Classic. I like the really narrow kind of limited simulation that is. It kind of got away for me personally, like when things started getting heavy with mechanics and stuff, I didn't care so much about that. I like the kind of petri dish.
Yes, that's how I was. Once SimCity was like, worry about the plumbing.
Yeah, it's like, no thanks. I don't even want to worry about the money. I just want to give me the $1 million code. I was more concerned with optimizing for that space, because you have such limited space, and that's where I found the fun, and I think a lot of people found the fun in that. City Builder, hardcore City Builder would be awesome to work on
with demons.
There's not demons.
You could work in like a coven of witches in the city, and then they conjure demons that come along and break your buildings.
Yes.
No, that could be one of the disasters in the game. Instead of earthquakes, you have covens.
Summon demon mayor. Demon mayor.
Yeah.
Demon mayor.
I like the disaster thing. A lot of people like the disaster thing, but it was never tied mechanically to the game, it felt. Like, it was just like a sloggy delete, right?
Here's a random way to just fuck your world up.
Yeah, exactly. It would be interesting if that was mechanically tied to the design, though, I think. Anyway.
You mean like, as in, like, if you build too many buildings in one particular area, it might be more costly, like earthquakes or something?
Yeah, exactly. That would be definitely, that would be tied. I'm sure they did that later on. But then, yeah.
There you go. If you make a set of buildings in the shape of a pentagram...
Yes.
It summons a demonic entity.
Yes.
Exactly.
It's like when Bowser showed up in SimCity. Instead, you'll have Satan show up and just stomp through.
Actually, this conversation is reminding me of a ridiculously old puzzle game like the N64 called Wetrix. Because it had like a similar
material there. You had to build like water puddles or something?
Yeah, like you had to build like masses of land that can encase water, but you couldn't build too high. You couldn't build too low, because if you built high, you had earthquakes. And if you built too low, you had like floods. It was a surprisingly weird balance that you had to maintain when the whole game was just water drops, sun meteors, and mountainous increasing levels increases. That was all the game was. It was surprisingly in depth.
Now I want to check that one out.
Oh yeah, man! It's Wetrix. Probably on an emulator somewhere. It's Wetrix.
For sure. Wetrix. So
now you have homework.
That could be turned into a pinball table, because like the more your ball goes over a certain area, like it makes it routine. Yeah.
I think I did see something where they had like, you know how they were trying to figure things out back in the day with the tables, and every table had this novel concept, but I think one was just the entire table was just craggy meteor. like the entire thing was plastic. So it wasn't it wasn't like a flat surface. It looks strange. I think it was a Stern thing. I think it's a Stern orbiter or something like that.
Yeah. Going like a pinball museum is an amazing sight, because you wouldn't think there was like a lot of innovation in pinball, but people were seriously working out.
Yeah, and I just keep finding things. I'm like, this is great, and I want to borrow this. Like the disc, like the spinning disc on Whirlwind is in Demon's Tilt. I just saw, found out what zipper flippers are. The flippers that like close and create like a, I don't know if you've seen them. The flippers that close and block the hole and then flip at the same time and send the ball up. And I was like, that's interesting.
It's pretty cool. I haven't seen that before.
Yeah, so super flippers would be something to do.
Maybe that'd be a good thing for this game, even. Like, once you get the main product, then you can have, like, table modifiers or something.
Yeah, we are planning on doing, like, modes. So by having different rules for variations, then I can, make the difficulty, have it more difficult, or have it, like, a... easier, or have a more hardcore experience. And I want to do something like that, where the outlanes are a little less forgiving and the tilt is a little cranked up, stuff like that.
Actually, that's worth asking too, now I think about it.
says you said you and your other friend was working on this together as a joint project. Mm-hmm. Did you have like any like friends or close relatives that you were bringing in as like, hey, I'm like stage 2.5 of my project here. If you could just give me some feedback on what I've done so far. And
I've had Ralph checked it out in a stage. I've had some people, definitely help me out and do the alpha testing. But funnily enough, before that, I was doing because I can't really do AI as like an artist background first. So I was doing like local multiplayer games, and I'm like holding two controllers trying to play against myself. And I'm like, this is a nightmare of my own design. Like, my life is miserable right now. And I did two of them, like, and actually they were okay. And like, I would bring them to the local meet and like people would play them and really enjoy them. But I'm like, no, I don't want to do this. And then gravity will be the enemy. And that's kind of is where, you know, pinball makes sense for me, is because, okay, now I don't have to think about AI. It just falls.
There you go. Are you planning on taking Demon's Tilt to any kind of conventions or shows?
We're in IGF right now. So if we get into that, we'll be there. If we're at PAX, if we do PAX East, we'll take it to PAX. Yeah. But other than that, we have a local indie game developer meet that I take it to in Rhode Island, which, as you can imagine, is small.
Yeah.
Small in Delaware.
See, it is.
Sorry?
I was jokingly about to say not as small as Delaware. I was like, wait, it actually is.
Yeah, it is.
I don't know if it's too late to look into it, but you should check out the convention MAGFest in January.
Is it a Jersey one?
It is by the D.C. area.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not too sure if it's too late to get in there for their indie game section or not, but that might be a cool opportunity to look at.
Yeah, I'll check that one out.
January, right? Beginning of January.
Yep.
Do they do a pinball hall there?
I don't know if they have a dedicated pinball area, but in their arcade room, they have a shitload of pinball tables.
Nice. Okay.
And I'm pretty sure they do tournaments there as well. So even if you're just going to check out the pinball tables, it might be worth going down.
Yeah, MAGFest. Is there music too? Is that what it is?
Yes.
It's music and games? Okay.
Yep.
Some live covers. So what's going on?
A lot of good music too.
Sweet. Purnell knows about MAGFest.
Just a tad.
Nice.
Just a tad.
Just a smidgen. So you're going into early access. What is your release window looking like?
Can't say yet, but like
soon. It's still in the when it's ready phase.
Not in like it's 3 years away. So you've played it, so it's close.
Yeah, like I can't imagine this game being like years from being done, given what I've played so far.
Right. Exactly. Some people get really mad that we don't have, people want to know when it's out, right? But we're like, we promise it's not that far off. So soon. But we mean it.
Soon, TM.
That helps at least, you know, slow the tide of like rage gamers or whatever, because on one hand, it's not quote unquote done, but you're playing it in all its glory right now. Yeah. And I've seen games where like they were in early access for like a good 2 years, but the game was pretty fun to play the entire time.
Yeah. So
it didn't even matter.
Yeah, I think because this, like, you know, you can play the complete experience. Like the game doesn't, you'll never hit like an area of the game where it's like, whoops, there's no more content. Sorry. like pinball loops over and over again. So the main loop and all of the smaller loops, they exist, and, you know, the player can go for a score, but we kind of needed an early access because balancing the score and the difficulty is something that needs to be like battle tested. I don't want to make any assumptions about the difficulty or you know, what jackpots should be, because we're finding that the playtesters are just smarter than me when it comes to that and can tell me better than I know as far as to what, you know, they expect these payoffs to be. And then they're going to develop their scoring strategies and stuff. And then it's going to be like, sorry, we have to tune that. And your thing is not optimal anymore. Sorry. But yeah, That's kind of what we're going to do. Like we're borrowing from like the way they would do shmup releases in the arcade is they do rolling changes in the wild. Like they'd update the ROMs and then have a definitive like black label version. I'm not saying we're going to have a branded thing, but as it's out of early access, it's going to be the polished rule set.
Just for the record, based on what you said, just I wanted to say thank you for asking not releasing the game so that I'd send the ball into the snake's mouth and it would close his mouth and say, wait till the final product.
No.
yeah, that would suck.
That would be awful. No. I wouldn't do that to you. Yeah, there shouldn't be any. If you do come across something like that, please let us know.
I will most certainly. Like, what the heck's going on?
Oh, I do have to ask, have you been using a controller or keyboard or?
I've been using, I want to say I was using my controller. Like once I was able to get to the table proper, the controller worked fine. Though I feel like I recall not being able to just.
Oh, the menu. Yeah. Oh, okay.
I used a keyboard and that's because I was too lazy to reach down and plug my controller in.
Mm-hmm.
So that is entirely, I'm still proud of myself. I scored 42 million. I was happy.
Yeah, that's a good score. Yep.
What is your high score and how badly have random gamers just put your score to shame?
So I did like 300 million.
Damn.
And we had one of our playtesters is like dominates leaderboards on the commercial products and he put up 1.5 billion on a ball. Jesus. Like
a ball?
Yeah, yeah. So, like, yeah. And I was like, this is great. Because he was, like, finding things about the game. I was like, wait, it's working. Like, I can't believe he knows this. Like, for him to, like, basically understand the rules. I didn't give him a guide or anything. He just figured it out himself. And I just kind of asked his assumptions about the game. And I was like, yeah, this is how high-level pinball people enjoy these games. Like, they like... picking apart the rules. And he's like, well, you don't have to really worry about balancing it for me because this is what I enjoy about it. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, something to be said for that kind of style too, because like, it goes back to what we were talking about earlier about how people, like you said, people tend to look at pinballs like this casual experience when the reality of it is, again, like you get these expert types who will take the game and their sole goal is to break the thing down bit by bit and know these are the places to get the highest scoring potential at these points in the game, the table evolution or whatever. And they work the system for everything.
Yeah, and I want to make sure that the game is tuned for those guys, like for sure. Like, so that probably means cranking the difficulty up because they tend to use like risk reward. And so if there's no risk involved, like they're not invested. So I guess it needs to be harder for those guys. And then they can do their own goal setting, like Oh, go ahead.
I'm thinking like hearing what you said about that guy and his super ridiculous score on one ball definitely puts me in the mindset of now knowing that it is a confirmed state that if I bum, it's my fault. I'm going to blame the game. But they all know that I'm full of it.
Well, he was doing things in his recording where there's like I just like score pips. Like, you know, the score when the scores are flying off enemies in Vanillaware games. I just like the way that looks. But I was watching his playback and he was actually like hitting the same target over. And I was like, oh my God, he's checking for the scoring values. I'm like, I didn't think anyone actually used those things.
To do that blows my mind because if I target more than once in a row, well, that was a fluke.
Yeah, it was not intentional.
Oh, it's not. I know I want to do it. Will I actually do it? Not so much.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I can't, like, if I can't, I'm not the great, like, sharpshooter on real tables. So it's kind of like a really obtuse shot off to the side, like on Dracula. I'm like, I guess I'm never getting multi-ball on this because I can't hit that. Or like creature has like all this, just these shots I can't hit.
I'm like the panic pinballer where it's like, don't go in the hole. Don't go in the hole. Don't go in the hole. And wherever else the ball goes beyond the hole is magic. Mm-hmm.
I guess I'm a panic player too, especially on multi-ball. I'm just cranking away at the flippers, hoping to hit whatever I can hit.
Yeah. For sure. I just tell people to look at the flippers in Multiball, like when they just starting out, just look at the flippers and don't concern yourself with anything else. And yeah, I think getting people over, if you try to introduce people into the hobby, is getting them over like the nudging part, and then the game opens up to them. Like once they save their first ball, hopefully they're down, like they start to understand.
I'm terrible at nudging.
I could definitely say flat out in relationships, I can say this right now even, if you're coming into this as one of those people that goes, oh man, I love Demon's Card, Devil's Crush, and you try to get on this, you got to turn your eyes for the multi-ball component, because it's a whole other world in this game when you get them all the screen, how to follow everything all over the table. It's nuts.
What's yeah. I mean, most commercial titles, like definitely all the 3-4 video titles where you have like you can only see the flippers and you can't even see the targets because the camera is fixed, like the old Amiga games. Some of them tried to do multi-ball, but I don't think many people have tried to do like a scaling camera solution. And so we're tuning the camera to make that less hectic, so that way you can tune that to your liking. You'll be able to set the view distance and set the sensitivity for the camera and how far it travels out, and the tracking and stuff. So that should be in there for early access, for sure.
Okay.
That's all about the options.
Yeah, that's what I like. So I want as many as possible.
Oh man. Well, I know we've been chatting for quite a while now. Is there anything about the game you wanted to talk about that we didn't bring up?
Yeah, all I gotta say, I guess, is it's up on Steam, and you know, if you're interested, please wishlist it, and then follow us on one of the social media. We're up on Twitter at Demon's Tilt, Instagram, Facebook also, but really on Steam, there's a community page, and if you have a feature request, you can just ask us, and we consider pretty much everything. I mean, everything we consider. we're listening. Yeah.
I know there's no date yet, but is there a price yet?
It's not $60.
That's good.
Yeah. Yes, buy.
Yeah, it's not $60.
And before it's $59.99.
No, it's not $89.99 collector's edition. It's going to be priced, you know, indie priced, like what you'd expect. I can't say yet, though, what the price is going to be. We're working on it.
So we'll know when it's ready.
Yes. For sure. But you guys have access, so you can play it now, I guess.
Yay. Brunel, Cole, did either of you have any other questions you want to ask?
Oh, no, I pretty much bombarded this man with all kinds of weight.
Thanks for having me. That was great. I'm glad to be able to talk about the thing to people who've actually played it, which is good.
And thanks for coming on the show. Like, as Joe can vouch for, I messaged him. I was like, yo, man, you heard about this game? A guy on my Facebook feed mentioned it to me. And he's like, let me see what we can do. And he puts his sense of best. Like, before he even mentioned the code, he's like, hey, do you want to try to interview this guy? I was like, what's not to want?
Yeah, yeah. I messaged Ralph, and right away he's like, hey, do you want to do an interview? I'm like, fuck yeah, I'll do an interview.
Yeah, he's on top of that kind of stuff, for sure. Compliments me well, who would otherwise be in like art world and like head down. Turns out you need to market the thing if you want to sell it.
What?
yeah, you can't just make it.
Crazy.
There's a whole other.
I refuse to believe that information.
I'm going to have to try putting you in touch with my one friend, Grant, because he's a musician and I love the music in the game. And part of me wishes that there would be some kind of arranged soundtrack for it with like full on real instrumentation to it. And he might be the guy to do it.
I love that idea too. It's something that I think is cool, because we did the soundtrack as like a Mega Drive thing, but yeah, we'll see where it goes with that. I guess I should mention that the OST is this kind of Mega Drive sounding thing. But I think I've mentioned that it's you'll be able to change the music too. So there's going to be like something like a jukebox, so you'll be able to, you know, pick and choose your table theme.
Good. Yeah, I like the sound of that.
Yeah, wait. That's me shoehorning a feature at the very end.
Well, I'm a music guy when it comes to like video games, so hearing something like that is a huge plus for me.
Yeah, I mean, otherwise you're just going to play your own music, you know, if you're not feeling it. So we want to give people options.
Awesome. Well, again, give us the sales pitch. Where can people get this? When will, oh God, I can't even ask, when is it going to be ready and how much? That's how I usually wrap these things up. So shit.
You have to just copy paste what I said before and then you put it at the end and then it'll make perfect chronological sense.
Yes.
Or just throw a brand new one from the hip. Like, so now we're wrapping this up. Tell us how much you like, you know, bouillon base, where we can find a really ripping, you know, chocolate chip cookie recipe.
Oh man! Well, on that
might
note,
be better than our usual segue of speaking of dicks.
Yeah, speaking of dicks.
See, what I'll do is I'll give you guys the soundtrack, and you can just fade it up over all of that. Well, slowly.
Honestly, if you have the soundtrack available, we usually play music on the show. I would love to play some of the music from Demon's Till on the show.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm assuming we're done now with our interview portion.
Pretty much. I didn't do a segue yet. So, Adam, thanks again so much for coming on the show, chatting with us. Pernell, hey, no and problem. Cole, thanks as well for being here. We're going to take a quick break, listen to some music. We'll be back with more show. Adam, do you have any final words to wrap this up?
Well, thanks for listening, guys. Please check out the game. If you like what you see, wish list. Thank you.
After these messages.
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for sticking around. Thanks again to Adam for coming on and chatting about Demon's Till. It is an awesome game. Absolutely worth checking out when it's ready to go. And able to vouch for that. Pernell, you're still here.
Well, don't spoil it just yet. The preview is next week. But yes, I am still here, hiding under the floorboards, drinking drops of water.
Are you still cold?
I am still very cold, but I just put on a hoodie, so I'm feeling a little bit better.
Yay!
Having like arguments with my pop recently about how low I keep the heat because I'm a cheap bastard who doesn't want to spend money on electricity. Like, I keep the heat on 66 when I'm at home and 64 when I'm sleeping. And he's like, that's insane. No wonder you're so cold. I was like, yeah, but my electric bill is still like $65.
Damn.
So I will take it because I know once I start jacking up to like 68 or 70 or whatever, it's going to go to like 150 or some stupid number. I'm sure of it.
I think our house, the temperature is at like 72 or something like that.
I think that's normal. I feel like everyone I typically talk to is running around like 70 plus. And I'm like just so accustomed to just trying to keep it as cheap as possible. One of the things I miss about my old apartment was the heat was included. So it just, if I didn't have any over it, so it would just run off of a radiator, and then we get to the point during the winter where I had like my windows open because my apartment got so hot. People were like, why are your windows? I was like, it feels good to have that breeze coming in. It's like negative. So I was like, the breeze feels good.
Oh, Lord. Well, since you're here, we might as well do a couple of reviews, huh?
I suppose we could do that.
Might as well. You got three of them to talk about tonight. The first one is called Party Hard, developed by Pinochle Games, published by Tiny Build. This one released November 22nd on the Switch for $14.99. It's 3 a.m. Your neighbors are having a loud party. Stop them. Party Hard is Tiny Build's award-winning stealth strategy game about ruining parties by any means necessary. Burnell, how is Party Hard on the Switch?
Party Hard Hard. Oh, I had to say that. It was just sitting there. So I got to preface in a sense, though, it's not going to hurt the game review in any way, I don't think. But I'd never played Party Hard 1, or rather, I had not played Party Hard 1 until this review. But I did review Party Hard 2 a few weeks ago. So my frame of mind is kind of coming in as a guy who played the sequel prior to the first game. But what is Party Hard? Party Hard is a game about a man who's got a murder to grab a nap. Isn't that everybody, though, really?
Mm-hmm. I mean,
figures. So the way this works is that you are thrust into a party environment. And that party environment has a lot of loud, rambunctious teens. And sometimes not so teens. Just depends on the location. And you are tasked with murdering every last one of them. No one shall be spared. And this can be done in a number of different ways. One, you can just pretty much walk up to them and stab them. You can stab them in the neck and kill them. However, if you are seen doing the dirty deed, someone will see you, they will run away, and they will call the cops. You can give chase if you want to by pressing the run button, but you are a very slow runner because you haven't gotten much sleep, and your stamina gauge runs out very fast. You're not catching that guy if he runs away, unless he's running to a phone that's very nearby. So you probably don't want to stab people unless you have you're in a position where no one can see you do it. But once you do kill the guy, if someone sees the body, not necessarily sees you do it, but just sees the body, they will still call the cops, but the cops will kind of just do a random canvas of the area. So it's still better than nothing if you can't hide the body. Just don't be seen when you do it. Other ways that you can kill people are you might find places that you can booby trap, like let's say an oven. You can walk up to the oven and trigger it to explode. And anyone near the oven, once it is detonated, will be caught on, set on fire and killed. And there are a variety. Exactly. Barbecued bodies. Mm-mm. And a variety of other ways in which to trap people and set things off. And then the last method, of course, is just through random events. One example being that I've come across is going to make a telephone call. You don't know who you're calling. The game just says, press button to make a call. And then you do it. And then the weird guy shows up in a car and just sets a bomb in the middle of the dance floor and just blows everybody up. I don't know why you had this guy's number. I kind of don't care. He was very efficient at his work. I like, but through all in all, you're trying to kill these people. You're trying to do it as efficiently as possible. One thing that becomes an interesting challenge, though, is the fact that you are, again, tasked with killing everybody. And this can become a rather methodical process. So this is not a game where you're going to pick up the controller and sprint all over the place just massacring people like some kind of arcade thriller or something. You need to be very methodical and intentional with everything you do. You see a car in the garage, you might want to set that bad boy a rip, but you don't want to do it just yet. You want to get enough people out to set up a nice combo. You know, again, you don't have much stamina, so you can just run around. So everybody you kill has to be planned and timed out. Though sometimes you're going to have the accidental, oh, crap, he saw me, shit. And that's the moment when the cops do show up and you have to make a decent getaway. Getaway? Nah, I'm in evasion. Because what happens is you can't outright just leave the scene. So if the cops are actually chasing after you and they know that they want you, you can try to evade them by using like secret escape route hatches. And sometimes it might be a ladder that you jump off the balcony, in which case the cop has to run around the other side. And if you do this enough, the cops will just get annoyed and frustrated, which is kind of hilarious when you think about it. And they'll just drive away, like, screw this crap. Like, you are clearly a murderer. And the cop just goes, I don't feel like it anymore. I'm going home. He just drives off. And everybody at the party just keeps on doing what they do, which is partying. Though you can't abuse escape routes too much, because there are many cameos in this game, I believe, but this one in particular I thought was funny and worth sharing. A guy dressed up as Mario shows up and just smashes your escape route if you use it too much, because he's a dick like that and you can't stop him. But it's funny to watch him do it every time. And I don't know where he comes from, but it's funny to watch him come from that place or just watch him show up. Honestly, while I do feel as though the sequel improved in a number of ways on this game, I'm not going to go on and name them because we're reviewing the first game. While I feel as though the sequel made some decent improvements on this first game, I did not feel as though it made the first game unplayable. It's still a fun time, and you can still unlock a number of different characters as you play the game. And I'm not sure if my code was like this only or if the game will, but it came with one DLC stage, I believe, too, which was a very weird, like, sort of Castlevania-esque castle with a very weird character who kills guys in a very Castlevania-esque way, which I like. But it was pretty cool to see that little aspect there, and knowing that you unlock other characters as you play the game by performing, like, maybe beating certain stages or by, let's say, evading the cops 5 times on one stage or something like that. There's cool little things that unlock characters who get, like, different weapons and different, like, stamina levels, and one guy in particular who adds a clock to the game. You have to kill people to get more time. It's weird. So that's almost like an arcade mode, but it's still got methodical aspects to it.
Nice. So $15 on the original game. What do you think of it?
I think it's a buy, especially because I did do some research and there was no word on if the sequel is even coming to the Switch. So
I would hope it is.
I would hope so too, though I would also wager that this is one of those components where if their first game sold like hot garbage, they're probably not going to really care all that much about trying to put the sequel on it. But so I feel like it's more like if there's been no word on it yet and the game is good. I mean, even if they never put the sequel out, you'd be doing good with the first game on there too. And if they do put the sequel on there later on down the line, you had some fun with the first game first. Nice natural progression into the sequel.
Nice.
Party hard.
Next game to talk about is called Coffee Crisis, developed by Mega Cat Studios, published by Cubic Games, released November 30th on the Switch for $9.99. The Smurglian race has come to Earth and they're not leaving until they steal our most prized commodities, our metal music, the best coffee, and all of the Wi-Fi. Get in the shoes of the only baristas on Earth with enough heavy metal in their veins to fend off this alien assault. Brunel, tell us about Coffee Crisis.
So Coffee Crisis is a beat-em-up that has a pretty freaking sweet metal soundtrack. I got to point that out immediately because the soundtrack in this game is good for busting heads open. Though, with that said, there were some hiccups that I had, which I'll get into shortly. So I should probably go over the basic layout of the game first, which is that, as you stated earlier, aliens have invaded for reasons related to metal and weird internet-based skullduggery. And your two barista characters, you can choose between what either Nick or Ashley, are going around busting their heads open using coffee kettles in their fists. Combat consists of running from left to right. You have a normal attack button, which lets you kind of like throw punches in like a combo flurry sort. You can hold down that button to charge up a strike, which then lets you like kind of throw a punch and knock guys across the screen. You can grab them and then either punch them a few times or throw them. Typical, you know, beat them up fair. And there's also a button you can press once you've built up enough of a charge, which will allow you to kind of clear the area around you, more or less. And the enemy variety, I like the enemies in this game, too. You get to fight anything from, like, normal aliens to aliens in wheelchairs that roll around like Professor X shooting beams at you. You get, like, general people that are possessed by the aliens, like senior citizens and rodeo girls, because there's, like, a Kenny Chesney sort of parody guy that's at the center of all this, which I guess explains the rum, the cowgirls with the lassos. But I enjoy the enemy variety in this game. I enjoy the music and I enjoy the theme. But the problem I ended up having when I played the game, and this might be something they could patch out or something later, I don't know, is that two things. One, combat was very challenging and not in the satisfying way. I mean, when you attack guys, typically in a beat 'em up, when you throw a couple punches, you get a guy locked into a combo. They're kind of staggered, right? You know, you can tell you got to get a feel that you're hitting them. You see that they're staggered and they get knocked down and you can kind of divert your attention to another enemy, right?
Mm-hmm.
In this game, I would start to punch a guy and I would think they're staggered, but then I would get hit and I didn't even realize that the guy was hitting me because I guess they can just kind of break stagger without any warning and you take damage when they do that. So it made it so that I couldn't trust if I even had guys locked down or not. And that's a very major aspect to what I feel is
beat 'em up strategy game, beat 'em up gameplay strategy. Stagger got beat 'em up, stagger 'em, knock 'em down, move on. So that was something I had to kind of get used to, and I never quite did, honestly. It was a kind of an annoyance. And then another thing is that another staple to usual beat 'em up gameplay is crowd control with jumping. So you got a bunch of guys on the screen, and you can't like get to a safe position to start punching and staggering them. You usually would jump kick them, knock them on the ground, and move on to the next guy. But the way jump kicks work in this game is you jump in the air, and then if you press the button, I guess I'm not sure if it's a timing thing or not, but there were times where I would jump in the air, press the button, and I'm clearly coming down on the enemy I want to hit, but it doesn't consider it as a connect. So it might be more like you have to press the button as you're coming, like as more so as you're on the way down into the guy or whatever. But I could definitely say that there were more than a few times where I thought I was jump kicking, but I ultimately didn't even hit anybody. I just kind of jumped into like a puddle where I got my ass handed to me. So with those things in mind, I was like, it made for a very frustrating time, I felt. Oh, the other thing, there's another thing. So this game also has power-ups in it. So the way power-ups work in this game is typically, if you find an object in the ground, you can smash it open, and you might be able to pick up like something that comes out. It might be like a weapon or like a coffee beans or something like that. But one big thing that I typically prefer in beat-em-ups is that you kind of know what to expect when you open up certain containers. Like in Final Fight Stage 1, you knew that even though it might be like a soda can or a jewel or a gold bar, you always knew that specific drum always has something related to getting points. You always knew that that barrel right before the end of the stage had a pot roast in it to get you your full health before you fought the boss. This is how you plan it out. But in this game, power-ups are random, and I mean completely random. So you get power-ups from breaking items, and you also get power-ups for sometimes killing people. But due to the way that works, you can't plan anything. And I mean, you really can't. It was a level where I guess like, was giving me a lot of problems. I guess it's early on in the game. It's like a bridge you're stuck on, and you're just getting waylaid by tons of guys at once. They just keep freaking coming. And one run I had got the stuffing kicked out of me about halfway across the bridge. Couldn't pull it off. But I had another weird run where I got almost 4 invincibility items almost back to back. So I was like, beat a guy up, got invincibility, started beating a bunch of guys up, and as the other one wore off, I beat a guy up, and another one dropped. And I was invincible again. So it was like, this was cool, but I couldn't even plan for that. It just happens that way. And there's going to be times I can imagine where people's like, how'd you get that stage? Well, I just lucked out and got like 4 invulnerabilities. And some people might like that, but in a beat 'em up, that's not really my cup of tea unless it was like a side mode or something, you know?
Yeah.
And there was even like one other power up that was like, I don't understand me. And if they're listening to this, I mean, definitely let me know because I'm curious. But there's one power up you get that's called CRT power. And when you pick it up, the screen kind of takes on like the filter style of a CRT television. But aside from that, I don't know what it does, if anything. Is it supposed to do anything? Or is it just like, hey, you found this power that just makes the game look cool for a couple minutes? I don't know. But it just seemed like kind of an odd thing to have as a pickup. So it was a sort of thing that kind of bugged me. So as much as I tried to get into the game, because like the aesthetics were there, the music was there, the graphics were there. Like, it had all these cool things. It even had a number of awesome enemies. It was just these small quirks that made it the game not feel all that fun to play into, which is a sad thing to say when you consider that I love beat-em-ups and I play them by the handful. Like, you know, I play tons of these damn things. It's just for some reason, this one wasn't one that made me want to keep going and say, I got to see the next stage. I got to see the next stage. It's more like, I guess I need to do one more stage because I got to give it a fair review. I got to do a little bit more. I got to give it a fair review. Though I will say, if a person does want to engage this game, as frustrating as the combat can be, the game runs on a password system. So every time you get through a level, they give you a password. And you can always put the password in if you die to kind of like spam your way back to the stage you died on and try it again. So you don't have to do it all in one run, but you are going to be dying. And you are going to be dying a lot. Unless you might be able to do certain things, like maybe pull off the charge shot and then punch guys constantly. But even that comes with a delay, so you can't really spam that per se, because when you're getting flooded with dudes, you might not even have the second to stop, charge up the fist, and then throw the punch. So it puts me in a weird place, because I don't want to deny it.
but I can't, fuck it, why not? And I don't know if I want to say try it, because there's so many options out there on the system for beat-em-ups that don't have the problems I'm having right now with this one.
It's just something that didn't click with you.
Yeah, I think that sounds about right. It didn't click with me. So I will say I'm one for my, well, yeah, do your thing. Got to do the thing.
$10, what do you think?
I'm going to have to say, for my personal take, I'm going to have to go with a deny it. But if you heard what I said about why I did not like it, and you feel as though those are not of a concern to you, I think this would kick it up to a buy it, because I named a number of positive things about this game. It's not that it's like a complete dud or anything. It's just the things that I did not like were big things, and that was what took it down, yeah, unfortunately.
Oh, well, I enjoyed it when it came out on Xbox. It's just not your cup of tea or your cup of coffee.
this man over here. He kills me.
Oh, man. Anyway, you got one last game to talk about. That is called Space Toads Mayhem, developed and published by Lime Vibe Games. It released November 20th on Steam for $3.99. And no nonsense, no auto fire, high score attack, fast-paced, reflex-based, top-down shoot-em-up, like 1980s arcade-flavored ice cream with laser blast sprinkles. Purnell, what the hell is this game?
I gotta ask before I even move on. Was that what they gave you to say? Or did you come up with all that?
That's the Steam description.
Okay. Either way, it's awesome, but I was just really curious about if you came up with that or not. So, Space Toads. This is another one of those games where it's like, it takes me to a weird place where it's hard. I gotta nail it down, but I'll talk about it. Maybe this will get me to my final decision or whatever. So, Space Toads is a game where you pilot a ship through multiple stages, and each stage consists of a number of waves. When you enter a wave, there's like a little gauge in the lower left corner where until you kill enough guys, or there's progress. I'm honestly not sure which of the two it is, because I'm too busy trying not to die. But depending on as you go through the wave, this gauge will move up. And once it ticks over to the other side, clear the gauge, you'll enter the next wave. Each time you enter a wave, you'll get enemies that are flying down the screen from the top to the bottom. And you'll also get an indication of the percentage of chances of a power-up showing up on the screen for you to collect. And what I've gathered is that it usually ticks down. So for wave one, it's like 90 to 95% chance a power-up will show up. And wave two might be like 80%, until eventually, like last one was like 60% to 50% chance a power-up will show up. So as you're killing jerks, power-ups may show up on the screen, and when they do, it's usually two power-ups on opposite sides of the screen, and they can range from a variety of things. You might get a Death Sun, which will be a giant floating sun which will float across the screen shooting bullets. Sometimes you'll get a Dark Hole or a Black Hole, which will create a black hole in the center of the screen sucking enemies in as they fly in. And there's a variety of other little power-ups too. I don't want to name them all on this podcast, but there's a number of them. And some are definitely better than others, though. So, and also, as far as fire is concerned, you have a basic gun, and as you kill enemies without getting hit yourself, you will charge up a gauge. And as the gauge hits, you know, the max, you will level up to another level of gunfire power. And then the surprises will repeat up through five stages. If you take a hit, a la Gradius, you track back down to level one, regardless of what level of gunpower you were hanging onto at the time. So the game pretty much requires you to be pretty on point with your dodging skills, or else face depression as your gun is pew-pew-pewtish. however, dodging in this game is interesting. I wonder if this is what they intended for the game to be. Because, you know, a lot of shooters, whether it's through Gradius picking up speed, picking up pops that use the speed option on your power-up gauge, or in some shooters you can push select to choose which speed level you want. I feel like in this game, in base form, you're not really built to dodge some of the enemies that are coming at the screen. Sometimes they'll just rip across the screen chasing after you. But what the way enemies work in this game is a strange one. So the basic enemy, I guess they are considered the space toads. They fly around the screen, and then every once in a while, their eyes will change from like white to red. And when their eyes turn red, they will charge at you. However, if the enemy charges into another space toad that is on the screen, he will kind of collide with it, sometimes sticking to it and sometimes kind of bouncing off of it, which means the enemy deflected the other enemy from hitting you. So there have been a number of times where I see a guy coming and I duck behind another enemy who hasn't been agitated yet or aggravated yet, and he'll defend me from taking a hit, which is an interesting mechanic because originally I was getting frustrated because I couldn't dodge any freaking thing. But learning that, I started playing a lot better. And then as I started to play better with that in mind, they started introducing other enemies as I got to different stages, like another space toad who actually grabs other space toads and throws them at you. And there's like other weird things like lasers that barf from the top of the screen and what have you. But it's an interesting little game. I started out not liking it much at all. Like, I was pretty much ready to come on here and give it a hardcore deny. Because, again, similar to like we were talking about with Coffee Crisis, like, there's a lot out there, and this mechanic was really frustrating me as far as like how dodging is impossible and blah, blah, blah. But I started playing more of it. I started getting more accustomed to what I believe was the intended design of the game, which is not so much speed dodges, but smart dodges. And I came away with an interesting feel on. Like, I started to feel like this game was more enjoyable than I thought. I wish there was more music, though, because there's only one track that plays on all the stages, and it gets repetitive real fast. But gameplay-wise, I came to start finding myself enjoying it. It wasn't a bad title at all. And I looked at the price of this game earlier, which you will eventually say as the wrap-up comes into play, and that made me feel even a little bit better about it, too. So...
Well, then $4 on it. What do you think of it?
Fuck it. Why not? Fuck, why not? There, I got to say it. It's an enjoyable little bit of a fun time. It plays differently than some shooters that I'm used to as far as how dodging a lot of the enemies works. And it's cheap. So I feel like this is one of those games where I think it might be worth taking a shot at to get a feel for yourself to go, you know, whether you like the game or you don't end up liking the game, I think that style of dealing with enemies is worth trying out for yourself. It's different. It's very different. Albeit, you know, again, you might get tired of that one looping track, though. Can't take you there.
But again, it's only $4, so fuck it.
Fuck it, why not?
And that's why we have that rating. Oh, man. Pernell, always good having you on. Thanks again for coming on and chatting with Adam, with me and Cole. It was nice having another voice on an interview.
It was a lot of fun, too. Thanks for inviting me on to do it. Guy was a pretty fun person to chat with. Talk about a game that I'm not going to say anything about yet. And
next week.
But it was just a genuinely good time. So thank you for having me on to have that conversation.
Well, do you have any final words?
Just the usual. If you want to hear more ramble dabble, check out Rhythm and Pixel podcast for stuff like that, for video game music on that end of the spectrum. And reading reviews as opposed to the verbal. A poor player. I write when I have time to not lose my marbles to type for long enough to do something. I type on there sometimes. And other than that, keep listening to the SML podcast, having a good time with us, and thank you for listening.
All right, moving on. Tim Ekibis is here. Tim, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing good.
Just good?
Post-holiday, yeah. Well, I was on vacation for most of the 2 weeks preceding Monday of this week. So getting back to work, it's like I was in one of those hazy half awake states last Monday night. And I like was like half awake. And I'm like, oh, man, thank goodness it's Saturday. And I'm like, oh, no, it's not. It was Tuesday. So reacclimating to real life after, you know, a week, almost 2 weeks. You know, I worked 3 days the previous week, a Veterans Day week. But it was like mostly, you know, just doing stuff with the family and chilling and playing a lot of Fallout 76 in the evenings. And
how is it? Because I'm hearing a lot of bad about it.
Well, let me tell you something, brother. that game, I was unsure of how I felt about it, like after the first few nights. But like I find it to be a ton of fun to play with other people. It definitely has its share of problems that need to be addressed, but everybody seems to come, I don't know about everybody, but people seem to have a lot of different opinions as to what they want out of a Fallout game, and the only thing they seem to be able to agree on is that this ain't it. but, you know, coming out of Fallout 4, I was just, like, really burnt out on Fallout, really, and that was, like... like a little bit into Fallout 4. I'm just like, man, Vats feels the same. Some of the same sound effects. Some of the, a lot of the same enemies. There's raiders everywhere. Like, I don't know if I especially love this game, you know? And I didn't actually finish the storyline in it, but, you know, I put 50 some hours into it just the same. So when they announced Fallout 76, I was like, oh, cool. If nothing else, this is something different.
Yeah.
You know, this is a different experience. I'm interested. You know, my group of people that I play games with was interested. So we all got it. And yeah, I've been happy. It's not, it doesn't have like the, I think like the story, like the engine, like, you know, because in other Fallout games, like, okay, you spec your character a certain way, and then that, in theory, gives you different ways to solve your problems.
Yeah.
You know, this is feels much more like you are going to level up and just get better at shooting things. Like, it's not like, oh, I'm going to solve this problem because I'm a hacker. You know, I was, like, reading some stuff online about, like, different builds for the game. And, like, yeah, like, the people that I play with, we've spec'd in slightly different ways, but it's not like dramatic, you know. It's not like we have like a medic or, you know, here's our hacker person. It's like, no, we all pretty much just are good at killing things in different ways. But the bottom line is, like, you know, what I enjoy most about Fallout games is just walking around and seeing stuff and exploring and seeing what they put into the game. And that is, there's plenty of that in Fallout 76, and you can do it with three of your friends. And it, that has been a blast. So yeah, I'm having fun with it. Like, it's certainly deserved, probably. I don't know if it's deserved the level of vitriol that it's getting, but it definitely has bugs. It is lacking in some ways. I expect that Bethesda will keep, you know, working on it and improving on it, I would hope, for a long time to come. It seems like it could be a good long-term sustainable game for them if they put in the work to make it stable and add new content and, you know, listen to what people want out of it. But as is now, it's like, you know, I'm constantly, you know, finding new weapons, trying different stuff, like running into new enemies, being able to overcome enemies I couldn't before. Just having a good time.
Do you think it has any legs for a single player guy?
No. I think it's probably just boring and not very fulfilling for a single player. A one-player run-through. Like, I think the meat of that game is playing it with other people.
So I should not play it.
I don't think it would be in your best interest, no.
Sounds good. Good unofficial review.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like one of those things where it's like, oh, I'm, you know, there's a lot of kind of survival aspects to it. Like, oh, I need to repair my armor. Oh, I need to feed myself, get water, I need ammo for this gun, whatever. And like, when you have other people you're playing with, it's like, oh shit, I need some aluminum. And somebody else is like, oh, I have a ton of aluminum, just here's some aluminum. It just makes things easier than having to scrounge all that shit yourself. Also, pro tip for anyone playing that game, there is a fucking great glitch right now where if you have a piece of pocketed armor, doesn't matter what it is, just has to be pocketed. If you unequip and equip it really, really fast, and this may not actually be possible on a controller, but on a mouse, you sit there, click, 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 equip it, unequip it really fast. And your inventory weight load that you can carry actually goes down, 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 down. And then once it goes into the negative, you can carry infinite shit.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It only lasts for that, like, play session. So, like, every time you log in, you got to do it again, but it's totally worth it. Oh my God. It's awesome. They're going to patch it at some point, but, for right now, especially when they're not patching your stash size until like for another week. Like, it is just take advantage of it while you can. Carry all that shit.
Have fun, kids.
Have fun, kids.
Well, boy. Fallout aside, we should probably talk about the games you're here to talk about, huh?
Anyway, the reason we came here. Yeah.
Speaking of dicks.
Speaking of dicks, we got two dicks.
Two dicks to talk about.
Spit ready to talk about. Two dicks. Talk about some dicks.
Well, your first game to talk about is called This War of Mine Complete Edition, developed and published by 11-Bit Studios. It released November 27th on the Switch for $39.99. In This War of Mine, you do not play as an elite soldier, rather a group of civilians trying to survive in a besieged city, struggling with lack of food, medicine, and constant danger from snipers and hostile scavengers. This game provides an experience of war seen from an entirely new angle. Tim, tell us about this one.
Oh my God, this game. Oh, I'm sorry. I'll just lead it off. I wish I liked this game a lot more than I did.
Oh no.
oh no. I mean, on some level, like this War of Mine, it is kind of meant to be a miserable and depressing experience because, hey, it's war. Huh? What is it good for? But man, oh God. Okay. So anyways, this War of Mine complete edition for Switch includes the base game and the Stories DLC, which there was only one story in there when I was playing it, and the other said coming soon. I don't think it was a thing where you had to beat the first story to unlock the other two. I think they're just not there yet, and I didn't see anything about them. I was kind of Googling around. It seems like only one of them has come out, maybe. Either way, the main kind of thrust of the game, like the main classic mode, as they call it, throwing up the air quotes, is you start up a game. They throw you into kind of a scenario with like some set of survivors, you know, some set of people that are trying to hunker down and make it through this little war that's going on. Like you're in an urban area where some rebels against the established government have hunkered down, and the government has the city surrounded under siege, trying to oust the rebels, and just like, It's a fucking goddamn mess. Like, you can't go outdoors in the daytime because you'll just get shot. The rebels aren't great. The government's not great. It's just not great. And you are the people caught in between. Like, this is the world news come to life before your very eyes.
Oh, Lord.
So, yeah, the idea is that you have to take these survivors, I guess, as well, keep calling them, and try to keep them alive until a ceasefire is called on, like the UN steps in or some shit like that. And then the city is then safe and you can get out. There is no fucking tutorials in this game. Oh my God. Oh, I feel like a lot of my issue with this game would be relieved if there was some kind of like a small tutorial scenario, just to kind of like, I know, like, this game is supposed to be harsh.
Yeah.
It's just like, it would really help to familiarize you a little bit with like, okay, when you're in your house, like, it just drops you in. It's like, okay. And then the first thing you can do with people is run them around to kind of loot shit and scavenge and find some scrap, find whatever items are in this abandoned building that you have decided to take over. So you'll like scrounge through piles and you're looking for stuff like food, medicine, or like, what else is there? There's a lot of, like, tobacco is a big part of this, and rolling papers. But then it's like raw materials like metal, wood, you know, circuitry, stuff like that you can use to build other stuff. So you'll have your people run around and like kind of scrounge all that stuff up. That's like, okay, what do I got? And then you can start building things to make your lives a little bit easier. Beds, heaters, like a radio.
So you're MacGyver.
It's stuff to collect rainwater, stuff to cook food, and stuff like that. So it's like, yeah, you can, there's a lot of stuff you can build off the bat, or, well, there's a lot of possibilities, I guess. And it's tough to know exactly which direction you want to go in, like what is actually useful, like what should you be spending those early resources on, like what are good base things to do. It just would have been really helpful to have like a small scenario that's like, okay, this is, you know, how you collect stuff. This is how you will get more rainwater. This is how you cook food. This is how you keep people happy. Like if you have, I had one guy in one of my scenarios who would not shut the fuck up about the last time he had a cigarette. And I don't smoke, and I hate the smell of smoke, so I am like, tough shit, shut up. but then it's like, at a certain point, like a trader came through and I got like a cigarette. I'm like, okay, maybe this will shut this guy up. And I'm like, okay, how do I use cigarette on man? How do I do this? You can't do this. He'll just sit down and start smoking. He'll just swipe one out of the inventory at some point, I guess, is what I found out, because I Googled it and I was like, how do I make him smoke? And apparently he'll just sit down and smoke if you have smokes about. And I'm like, okay, well, I didn't know that. It's great. You can build a herb garden, which you can upgrade to a vegetable garden, which seems super useful because food is super hard to find. There will be like mounds of crap around your building that takes people like a certain amount of time to move out of the way, which a shovel will help with. But to get a shovel, you have to make a metal working bench and then make the shovel, which is like stuff. Yeah, you know, just like I just wish there was like some kind of quick, small, like 5-day little tutorial. It's like, oh, okay, like keep it real nice and simple, take it easy, you know, just so I can understand the mechanics of the game, you know? And what all is going on before I really get going with it, which led to just like a lot of trial and error going through. Like one of the things that's super freaking frustrated me is in the one story scenario that's in there called Father's Promise, where you're this dad with his sick little girl. I'm like, okay, well, this guy, I scrapped everything around the building they start you in, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to build this dude a bed because he's going to have to go out and scavenge at night, so he's going to be tired during the day. Like, I'm going to put him in the bed. Motherfucker won't sleep. Total waste building the bed. Great. That's awesome. Wonderful. Seemed like a total waste anyways, because after 4 days, like, this scenario frustrated me so hard. And it's like what I was playing today, so I'm like extra heated. It's just like, it, you know, it felt like you had agency in the first few days of this scenario, but you really didn't. It was like, okay, you can't go out and scavenge because he won't leave his daughter alone, and he won't sleep because he won't be unconscious near his daughter because he doesn't want anything to happen to her. But then after 4 days, the moron falls asleep from passing out from exhaustion anyway, and spoiler, she disappears. So then you have this dumbass running around, limping around because he hasn't eaten anything. He's tired as shit because he wouldn't sleep in the damn bed I made him. You know, trying to find out what happened to his daughter. But it's like, and it makes it like this hot pursuit thing. Like, okay, it was your dickhead brother. You go to your brother's house. He's dead. There's this trail of blood. Okay, it went either to the pharmacy or the school. You should go check this out now. No, we can only go to one place per night. So we're going back to the house. What am I going to do with the house during the day? I don't have anything. I got nothing for you, guy. There's nothing you can do here. You could sleep on this bed that I made for you that you don't like.
Ungrateful bastard.
And that's it. But it's like, it's not like there was more stuff for me to scavenge there or whatever. And then it was like, yeah, after going to a couple locations and I'm just like limping around and some guy's like, well, I'll tell you what happened to your daughter. He sounds like Deckard Cain. if you bring me 3 food, and I'm like hunkering, I'm like, okay, I gotta go find 3 food. And this dude is moving so slow. And I'm just like, no, I'm done. Fuck that. Anyways, back to the classic mode. So yeah, you'll build things and it's, I was getting the, like, I had one game that I felt started going pretty well, and the fact that one of my 3 people got fucking shot, in like the first 2 nights, or 3 nights or something like that, where I was like, okay, I got rainwater collectors going. It's just like, I just don't have food. And I know they really want you to be struggling, but then it's like, that was when I saw in like the little tooltip text, like, oh, if I build the herb garden and then I upgrade the herb garden, then I'll be able to build a garden. Because instead of upgrading that, I had upgraded like my workbench at my house, thinking that would unlock more things for me to build, but it didn't. I was just like, and then I figured, I was like, it's just like a lot of trial and error and wasted time that was just like really frustrating to go through. Like all it really tells you is like when the game starts, it pops up the controls and tells you what every button does. And I'm like, yes, I looked in the settings. Thank you. and then when you get into combat the first time, it's like, okay, you push your trigger to be in combat or to take a swing at people. Like I've once had a knife. I made a knife. I was going to knife somebody, I think was the plan. And it didn't work out, but yeah, for the most part, I got into combat and I just got shot or stabbed and it was like, okay, right.
Nice.
So you do all this crap around your house during the day, but then at night you pick what people are going to do. So you can either have people stand on guard, which is important because your house will randomly get raided at night. Yeah, it might not, but it might. It seems to me it always happened when I was like giving someone a night off, you know. People could sleep. Yeah, they can guard the house, or they can go out to, you can send one person out to scavenge some location out in the area. So you'll have your map and the map will tell you like, okay, this is the kind of stuff that is at this location. There might be people to trade with. There might be danger. Like outright danger means just people will be super aggressive and just try to kill you on sight. Caution means that there will probably be people there that you would need to be careful of your behavior around them. And so, yeah, you send someone out to scavenge and try to get as much stuff as they can and get back to the house. And then, you know, you then have materials to try to go on with the next day. But going out scavenging and I died a lot, man. People went out there and they'd like, because I would be going, I'd go into like a building. Like the first time I went into a building, I know, and in some instances they wanted to make you feel bad. Like, one of the first buildings I went to had people in it was like this old couple. And I'm like, okay, well, I need shit, so I'm stealing your shit. And I stole their shit, and they're like, man, why are you taking our stuff? Why are you a jerk? And the next day, my guy got home. He's like, man, I stole those people's stuff. How are they going to survive? And at least one guy in my house was like, man, screw everybody else. We need to get through this. And I'm like, yes, I am with you, sir. He's going to be Pouty McPouty Pants because he stole from old people. But hey, now your arm is bandaged, so everybody's doing okay, right? We're all alive.
And they're old anyway.
They're old anyway. I mean, their house seemed cozy. But, you know, in other instances, it's just like, okay, oh, crap, there's people here. And sometimes they'd be like, you know, be careful. What are you doing, buddy? Like, they'd be super suspicious. And there's like some things they don't seem to mind if you go through. And then there were some things I realized after a couple of mishaps that where you open, you scavenge in like a cabinet and it will be labeled private property. And taking that stuff really makes them mad. Though if they don't see you take it, that seems to make a difference. Though then you'll feel bad. I mean, I don't know how you know. Did these people stencil private property on their little cabinets so you would know it was theirs and not just like other crap that they don't care about? Though there was one particular scavenger area I went into where I ended up, it was like the central square. So there was like a bunch of people out there trading. It was kind of like a central gathering space. So there was a bunch of people to trade with there. But there's also a door at the end that you could pick the lock. And I'm like, okay, I'll pick the lock. This made people angry because apparently I was breaking into their apartment. And so, like, all of a sudden these people come running after me. And, you know, just like the combat in that game is not awesome. So pretty much any time I got in. Oh, no, I did kill a man with a shovel once. That's right. I forgot about that. His blood's on my hands.
Yeah, it is.
His buddy killed me, though, so I did not make it out of that. But I did murder a man with a shovel. So, yeah, and then it's and like, you know, when somebody dies, one of your three people dies, it's just like, oh, fuck, man, come on. You know, it sucks.
So it's just a very brutal, harsh game.
It is a brutal, harsh game. But then, like, you get into, like, actually, like, playing it. And I talked a bit about Forgotten Anne last week, how, like, the animations of Anne made it so you'd kind of run past stuff a lot sometimes. And this, you know, this game was originally on PC, and I imagine this was a lot easier on with a mouse because you could just click on the icons you need to click on. Because sometimes they're very close together, like at the crafting points. Like in particular, in the story scenario with your little daughter, she'd be in her bed and you'd walk up to her and there's three icons overhead. So trying to stand in front of the right one, there was like one where you'd like sit down and console her, one where you could give her food, one where you'd give her the teddy bear you found in the basement. And I'm like trying to land on, or it was a dog. Excuse me. I was trying to land on the plush dog to give her. And it was just like, and also in that scenario, everything about that scenario pissed me off. There's like a spot in the house where you have to, there's like a gap in the floor and you use that, like you'll climb down it. And then when you're moving back up, you'd climb on the railing and go up. And just for whatever reason, I would go down there and I would press on the stick to move right, but I would press slightly up. So he would like go through the animation of climbing back up again and then climbing back. And I had to make him climb back down. I'm just like, oh God, dude, come on, seriously. So it's just like trying to accurately hit the marks of what you wanted to hit. Was a pain in the butt, which is especially problematic when you are in combat or like you're trying to sneak around someone's house and you have to be very careful with how much you're moving the stick, because if you move up to a door, you won't stop. You don't stop to press A to open the door. You just barrel through the thing and make a bunch of fucking noise. And so like trying to sneak around was tough because you have to be really careful with the stick to sneak up, like, okay, carefully open the door. Now I'm going to step through and then I'm going to gently close the door. Okay, fine. But more often than not, I'm just like, ah, and I move a little too fast. And I'm just like, kaboom, through the door. And they're like, oh, there's a guy down there. We should go stab him with our sharp things.
And then you die again.
And then I die again. Pain in the butt. Also a pain in the butt is when there's an icon to exit a scavenge area. And there are icons, I should say, because sometimes they're on either side of the building. So I'd be going around and think and just, you know, trying to play the game and think it was a scavenge point. And I'd click on it and then you just leave. It doesn't ask for any confirmation when you're leaving a scavenge area. You just leave. Just poof, gone. So like one night I did that. I went to a scavenge area. Then I accidentally clicked on the button that was right there. And I went whoosh, right back out. Got nothing for the night. Nothing for the evening. Total waste. And the house got broken into. Just shit all over me. I'm just like, that's like, why? Like, it's so scavenging and going to those areas is so important. Why in the world would they not just say, are you sure you want to leave? before they had you leave. Like, that is an actual insane thing to me.
So in a game that makes the is supposed to show you the suffering of war, it sure did make you suffer.
It did make me suffer. And, you know, I...
Mission accomplished.
It did. But I did have one campaign that was, you know, one of my characters did die pretty early on. But then I got into a pretty good rhythm with the other two because one guy was fast. So I would send him out at night. And he'd come home and sleep. And then the other guy was a good cook. So he would cook food and then complain about how much he wanted to smoke. So I kind of have him do stuff in the morning, like around the house. And he would like build stuff with a scrap for the night. And then he would get tired. And then the other guy would wake up and then he would go do this other thing. So I kind of got into it. So like I could see like how this works in trying to manage your inventory and find stuff and this, that, and the other thing. It's just like sometimes it was just so frustrating to like, because it felt really trial and error with me trying to figure out like the crafting, the combat, the scavenging, like what I needed, what things were for, figuring out all of that. And then just like these brutal moments where it's like, oh, someone broke into my house and stole my shit. And like, oh, I pissed this person off for reasons that I would figure out in like a few encounters later. And now I'm dead. And I should say, so like the first scenario I pulled up, when I keep saying like, I wish there was like some kind of a tutorial thing. The first scenario I pulled up, because it first, when you first start the game, it randomly gives you a scenario with some characters. After you've had one go to conclusion, it does let you customize a scenario, like pick which people you want to be involved and kind of like how long to hold out and this, that, and the other thing. You can set up a custom game. But the first one it gave me was a father and daughter, not the same as the Father's Promise story, but just like a father and daughter. And that is the worst. It is such a bad way to start out because kids can't do shit to start out. So it's like on top of like having to figure out like what exactly I'm doing in this game with no tutorial, I only have one character to do it with. And I also have one other thing to watch out for, which is the daughter. So it's like I have to try to keep her happy and fed while also trying to figure out what I'm doing. And like the third night with that guy, he died, and then the girl ran away, and then that was game over. So when I started up a new game and I had three adults that could all like functionally do stuff, that was much more pleasant, and that like went a lot better, and ones from that forward went a lot better. But it was real harsh to just like be thrown in. It was a really bad first impression to be thrown in and then just having to do all the stuff. I'm like, just this is crazy, man. Like, you should really I totally understand what you're going for with this game, and I think it's great. Like, I shouldn't glaze over the fact that like the look of it is kind of like this black and white, like really stylized, like sepia, you know, gritty tone to it. There's like this, the music that is there is this, like kind of ambient guitar. Like, it really does set, a fantastic mood. Maybe lays it on.
It just
like
needs more hand holding.
It's just like, it could use a bit more, of an explanation, a bit more easing into it, what it wants to do. And like maybe make the interaction markers were like a bit bigger, it would make it a little easier to be on the one you want. It's just like, it ends up being like a lot of things that kind of build up and just continue to frustrate me over time. Yeah, it just, oh, so,
well, I gotta
ask. The Father's Promise made me so mad.
Well, I got to ask, $40 on it. What do you think of it?
No, I would have to, I could not recommend this. I would have to tell people to pass on it, for now. I just like, my experience was just too much of a downer. Even when I was like, things were working functionally. I mean, it is meant to be a downer of a game for sure. It is doing something different, but just like playing it was such a chore that I couldn't possibly give it a recommendation for $40.
Oh, well.
Hey, man, I'm in the minority. A lot of people like this game.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's gotten great reviews everywhere. It just doesn't click with you.
I mean, maybe it's how it handles on the Switch. Maybe it's like the transition to, I mean, it's on other stuff too, I guess, but maybe it's like the smaller screen with the controller. Like, I don't know. I could definitely see how it'd be a lot easier to control on PC and switch between characters and manage things, but
yeah.
Not everything's for everybody.
Very true. But you got one other game to talk about. That is called Mother Russia Bleeds, developed by Le Cartel Studio, published by Devolver Digital, released November 15th on the Switch for $14.99. An old-fashioned beat-em-up with big doses of adrenaline and trippiness, somewhere between the classic style of Streets of Rage and the ultra-violence of Hotline Miami. Set in a cold, ruthless Soviet Union, Mother Russia Bleeds aims to conjure up anxiety, unease, and drug-addled frenzy. Tim, tell us about Mother Russia Bleeds.
Well, it's like Streets of Rage meets Hotline Miami. Case closed. It's done.
Where'd you hear that?
I heard it just now in the copy they gave us. I have such a pet peeve with how I feel like most game reviewers approach beat-em-ups since like the year 2000. Because it just feels to me like people don't like them. Like they get treated like a, you know, this old genre that just doesn't need to exist anymore. That was only there to munch your quarters in the 80s. And just kind of like, I don't know. It just really burns my biscuit when I hear people shitting on, belt style brawlers. Cause I legitimately love the genre. I think it is a ton of fun. Just even with a limited, like, straightforward moveset, just, like, figuring out how to kick ass from point A to point B, and figuring out how to best use your character's moves, how to herd around the enemy AI so you're not getting the crap kicked out of you all the time, how to, you know, play with the AI of the bosses, like, how to manage, like, when you're picking up food and this, that, and the other thing. Like, I think it's, there is nothing wrong with the genre, as it stands and is generally a lot of fun.
Well, I agree with you.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Like, it's like the same thing that people like about, like, Dynasty Warriors and Hyrule Warriors. It's like one against, you know, 100 just scaled down and going 2D. Even stuff like Devil May Cry kind of is evolved from that, you know? Yeah. Just like straight, you know, room by room action games. So, yeah. Mother Russia Bleeds. This game has 4 characters, 8 story levels, and then it has a survival mode, which you will unlock more levels for that as you play through the game. For combat, they give you a light attack, heavy attack, you got a grab, a jump, and a dash. And something I really like is that most of the buttons do things in every context, you know? I just feel like that helps so much in games like these that, okay, if I grab a guy, I can jump with the guy. If I jump, I can grab a guy. If I jump and do a strong attack, it does a different attack than when I do a light attack. If I dash, then I get different attacks from light heavy if I'm on the ground. Like, you can mount downed enemies and punch them in the face in this game.
Nice.
Yeah, or drop elbows into them. And, you know, I want the buttons to do something in every scenario. And though, even like when I'm down punching a guy and if I hit the heavy attack, it makes you stand up and do the heavy attack. But that's useful because if you're down punching a guy and someone is approaching you and you that is how you get out of it and counterattack right away. It's smart. Another smart thing. Each character, when you dash and do a heavy attack, you do this kind of slide kick. And what it does is it makes enemies flip over you. So if there's enemies on the edge of the screen, you can then herd them more towards the middle, which is really useful because that's a problem that beat-em-ups have had. Like, enemies will just kind of float there on the edge of the screen, and you'll do, like, one combo to them, then they fly back off again. You're waiting for them to come back. In this case, you can herd them, like, each character has a way that you can very easily move enemies back to the center of the screen. And you, like, there's characters that have, there's once I found out the big guy basically has a German suplex, I was pretty much sold on this game. but no, every character has grabs and slams, and stuff like that. Each character, one of my favorite things to do is to grab an enemy. You can then throw them up in the air, straight up, jump up, and then grab them and slam them down right in place. It's a lot of fun to do. That is the actual recommended counter for annoying characters that jump kick you, is to just jump it, then grab them out of the air and pile drive them into the ground.
Sweet.
It's great. So yeah, the combat is really fun. It's really thought out with what the moves do, and how they interact with enemies, and how it helps you move enemies around the screen. It clearly shows that, you know, these people played a lot of beat 'em ups and they're not just like putting some pixel art paint onto like a really base brawler, just to be like, hey, it's an old school beat 'em up. Like, no, they thought about things here, and are adding to the genre, some ideas. Injections. So the kind of the story of this game goes is that you are, in this, you are, a Romani, a traveler, a gypsy, if you want to be offensive about it. And like your camp is raided, you're taken to this, underground chemical facility and you're injected with this drug. And then you keep a needle of this drug around and it can either heal you or it can power you up, like make you super strong and fast for like a short amount of time. And then you can pull more of the drug out of addicts that you're beating up in the levels. So that's kind of the push pull of like, okay, I can heal or I can be stronger. And then I need moments where I can kind of, where I need to clear enemies out or knock them down so that I can pull more of the green juice out, to use, to keep yourself going. Should be noted that if you go through and you make it to wave 10 in any of the survival levels, you unlock, injections that do different things. So that's some replay value right there, is trying to figure out or just like unlocking that stuff and playing through the game in different ways. Which is, you know, it's important. The game does have four characters, but I like that added layer of like, okay, you can pick a different, injection and see how that changes your gameplay experience, because beat 'em ups can get repetitive. So it keeps giving you like, you know, just a little bit, a dash of new flavor to, you know, to throw on your experience. One of my favorite things about this, as opposed to other beat 'em ups, is how they design their bosses, because each boss kind of has a gimmick. Or at least an easily recognizable pattern, like especially in old arcade beat 'em ups. You know, bosses are just made to suck the fucking quarters out of you, man.
Oh yeah.
Like they are cheap as shit. And this is not a game like that. No, they don't need it to act like that. So each one kind of has a gimmick. So like the first boss, like one of the simpler applications of this is just that the boss will do two attacks. And then it will need to pause for a second to inject itself with more of the drug. And that's your opportunity to attack it. And each boss kind of has something different going on. One I really like later on is there's a guy that you're fighting on train tracks. There's like two adjacent train tracks and he has night vision goggles on. So one of your friends is trying to throw you flashbangs that you can use to blind this guy. So you can blind this guy and then attack him. But if you time it right, you will blind him and stun him when he's standing on one of the railroad tracks that a train is about to go by on, and the train will hit him.
Nice.
Right? Mm-hmm. So that's awesome. And that goes on like right till the last boss. And that's something that I really appreciate, and makes the game like a lot more playable, is that there just isn't these cheap as shit bosses that are there just that you have to be super careful with and like watch their pattern and da-da-da-da. Like I like changing it up. In a lot of instances, because of that, I was able to beat bosses on the first try. The game uses checkpoints instead of lives. So again, that's like a another modern twist on it there. One of the cool things it does. Okay. So now I'll just talk about it with this because it's part of the graphic. So pixel art, is really good. It's gritty. This is kind of where the Hotline Miami feel really comes into it. Some really interesting stuff going on in the backgrounds that help tell the story. Or just, I guess I should say, shape the world. They help tell the story of the game, but, you know, they shape the world and tell you, like, what's going on. Neat thing they do, again, so the enemies don't have life bars, which is a pretty standard thing in most beat 'em ups, that you'd be able to see the enemy life bars. In this case, the damage is just reflected on the enemy's character sprite, so they become more bruised and bloody as they're getting closer to being dead, I guess. But there's like they did a really good job of having, it's not just like, okay, this character looks fine and now they're bleeding out, so they're almost dead. Like there's a really good kind of like multiple sprites per character to demonstrate like how beaten up and how far along they are. So you can say like, okay, this guy's kind of beat up over here. This guy looks a little bloodier over here. I want to finish off this guy and then go over to fight that guy over there. So that's another really cool touch to it. Da 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 da. My only problem with the game is I had a few glitches. There was a little bit of a frame rate dropping. This is the Switch version, of course. So there was like some moments where I saw the frame rate dip a little bit. That wasn't a big deal. What was annoying is I had two moments where the game glitched out and I just had to hit start and restart from checkpoint.
Oh, man.
You know, the first time it was just like, okay, well, I don't even remember what happened because I was like, whatever. Like, it's just a thing. I wasn't progressing. Maybe an enemy got lost. I don't know what. The second time, I'm walking through this level, and all of a sudden, I just walk off the map into total darkness. Now, this game does have some kind of weird in-your-head shit going on, not unlike Hotline Miami. So I was like, okay, well, what's this weird thing that I'm going off into total darkness? Like, what's going on here? This must be part of the game, right? Narrator, it wasn't. So, like, I'm just, like, running off into this eternal blackness, and I'm just like, what the edit? Should I just keep running? Can I run back? Is something supposed to happen here? Do I use my injection? What's going on? Oh, the game's just glitched, isn't it? And then I restarted from checkpoint, and then it didn't happen. So that sucks. That's shitty, friends. And it happened twice on one, you know, playthrough. So that just makes me worry a little bit about this game. But other than that, it is a very fine beat 'em up, I must say.
Well, then $15 on this one. What do you think of it?
I buy it. Buy it. Yeah, it's a good beat 'em up. It's not like oh yeah, it's a fun that Capcom arcade beat 'em up bundle that came out a few months ago. Like, those are arcadey ass beat 'em ups that it's just kind of fun to get in there with your friends and drop a bunch of quarters in them. They're fun to play, but they're, you know, arcade beat 'em ups. Like, this is a beat 'em up created, you know, looking at the 20, 30 year history of the genre and like making improvements and making changes. It's a much more kind of substantial experience than that, and I think it's really good.
Awesome. Yeah, I enjoyed it on PS4 back when I first played it. God, I don't know how long ago it first came out on PS4. It's been a while.
Like, it was like last year.
It was fun, though. I enjoyed it. It was cool to see a beat-em-up that was actually really violent.
Yeah. Yeah, it is violent. Like, I guess that this is worth saying. Like, there is blood everywhere.
This is an M-rated game through and through.
Yep. Yeah, I believe they use the F word.
Fuck that.
Yeah, exactly.
Crazy. Oh, man. Tim, it is always good having you on chatting. Do you have any final thoughts to sum it up?
Oh, no, I don't. I had sign off for this war of mine, but I'm just going to let it go. I'm going to let it go. Just breathe out. Let it go.
All right, next game to talk about is called Adventures of Bertram Fiddle, Episode 2, A Bleaker Predicament, developed by Rumpus Animation, published by Chorus Worldwide Games, released November 22nd on the Switch for $9.99. Puzzles, pigeons, and puns take a deep journey into Victorian London with Bertram Fiddle. Explore secret passages, discover hidden objects, meet suspicious characters, solve befuddling puzzles, and cringe at puns more terrible than ever as you unravel the mysteries of A Bleaker Predicament. Checking this one out, as well as a couple others. Chris Taylor, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing good.
How's things?
Things is all right. I, drink a lot of caffeine to combat tiredness, so now it's like I'm still tired, but I'm also jittery. Which is called being an adult, I guess.
Yay, growing up.
Yay.
Oh, man. So how's Bertram Fiddle Episode 2? I remember you enjoyed the first one.
Yes. And in fact, I did a very good thing in that to prepare for playing Episode 2, I actually went back and played all the way through Episode 1. Mm-hmm. So I've beaten that one now. And yes, I quite enjoyed it. It was one of my favorite point and clicks on the Switch and one that I would commonly point to. For people looking for good games in that genre, and indeed was not disappointed. So the sequel, actually, it is a direct continuation of the first game. The first game, I mean, I don't want to spoil anything, but it does end on a, like, to be continued tag. And so this game picks up a little bit in the future after the events of the first game. Of course, the premise of the first game is that we are part of it is that Bertram is a Victorian explorator. The game often throws sort of malpropisms out there, you know, words that don't actually mean anything, but they're close enough to the word they intend, for comedy effect, of course, which I really love. That's one of my favorite comedic things, and British people do it so well because, you know, it's kind of their language. So basically, the part of the premise of the first game is that Bertram is trying to find new adventures to go and pursue in search of rewards and treasures, because his wife warns him that if he can't find such things to keep her in her, you know, her exquisite lifestyle, then he has to find a real job. And this, of course, is of the greatest dread to our protagonist. And so the second game opens up with him having actually, you know, finally been sort of strong-armed into accepting an actual hourly job at the Dolesworth Adequate Soap Company, who they sell adequate soap, which is pretty great. And actually, it's really fun to read their ads. Like the first game, the second game is full of ads that you can read that are just pasted up on walls, and you can take a closer look at them and read them, and they're amazingly funny. So yeah, the Dolesworth Adequate Ad Company. So the game actually opens up with you completing a day of telephoning people with an old-timey switchboard and asking them if they want to purchase soap. And from there, you actually sort of notice that there's a few more things to do in this game versus the old game. The thing I noticed right away is that the animation is much smoother. They've definitely made some improvements to the aesthetics, but they're using the exact same art style, which is a great sort of comic-y, cartoony, you know, look. You know, Bertram, of course, has a giant pink croissant as a nose, and, you know, different style choices like that. It's all very, you know, it serves the comedy as well as being, you know, sort of conveying this message of dreariness and Victorianness. But anyway, so yeah, you get him through a day of work, and you then discover that your boss is perhaps not all of what he seems, and so a new mystery sort of, you know, begins to show itself, and, you know, you have to go and travel and talk to his mother, who tasks you with, you know, getting to the bottom of his strange doings, whereupon you actually, you know, at the end of the first chapter, end up being framed for a murder. And so you start chapter two in jail, and that's where the real sort of dicking around with picking up items and combining them and, you know, doing the point-and-click puzzle thing begins. However, unlike the last game, this game has you splitting the gameplay between Bertram, who is sitting in jail, and his Peruvian Cyclops friend Gavin, manservant Gavin, who is out of jail and actually can walk around the you know, the city and sort of begin piecing together the things you need. And between the two of them, of course, you gotta get Bertram out of jail, and then your adventure can continue, etc. So, yeah, a lot of new things. There's new ways to interact with stuff. Now you can just look at things, and the game will actually tell you rather than... So the way that this game works is that it tells you right off the bat is that, you know, you press A to interact with things or touch the touch screen. And if you just hold it down, then it will actually show you every point that you can interact with. So there's no real mystery to, you know, having to move the cursor around and click everything. You know, there's certain things you can click and the game lets you know what they are. And they used to all just be indicated by a regular circle, but now you've got an eyeball that'll actually just look at the thing for you. You can now go to kind of scenes within scenes. Sometimes the camera will close up on a certain area, or, you know, if you look into a mirror, then it will take you to the front of the mirror, things like that, etc. So, yeah, overall, this game, while very recognizably the same as Episode 1, you know, they've added in a whole bunch of new things. Seems like there's a lot more people to talk to, and, you know, it just seems to be improved in every way. So story-wise, you're definitely going to want to play through the entire first game before you even mess with the second game, because it's not only is it a direct continuation of the story, but every character from the first game makes appearances like constantly throughout the second game, and it's nice to have that context. Yeah. You know, the game does good enough, like, you know, not really requiring knowledge of the first game to proceed through the puzzles, but it really helps you enjoy the whole thing a lot better.
Yeah. Well, overall, $10 on it. What do you think?
$10, I say definitely. If you've played the first game, the second game is, you know, a must play, because the way the first game ends, you definitely want the adventure to continue. And, you know, this game is probably going to be about the same. I'd say, you know, the first game probably took about 4 or 5 hours to beat. You know, if you watch somebody play through it expertly, there's over an hour's worth of, like, just content, you know. And this one already, like, seems like it's bigger, so that's kind of nice. I definitely recommend actually, you know, spending the money to get both games. And I'd say it's well worth it either way. This is an excellent point-and-click adventure. It's hilarious. Art style's good. I mean, there's nothing really I can complain about. Oh, I can complain about one thing.
Let's hear it.
So sometimes the dialogue, the characters will start the next line before they're done with the first line. So, like, they'll be talking and then suddenly they're saying the next sentence. Kind of like one of those YouTube vlogs that are so annoying.
Yeah.
Where people are staring at the screen and, like, reading the script or whatever, and then they do, like, those cuts to, like, where they're starting the next sentence, but they didn't.
Oh, yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, it's not noticeable at first, but, like, the more I've been playing, like, especially all across, like, Chapter 2, I noticed that there's a lot of lines of dialogue bumping into each other, so maybe that's something they can fix, but that's the only thing I would say, you know. It took me out of it a little bit, but that's a minor complaint. And for a $10 game, that's expected. So it's a great, great series. Get into it. It's really great for people who find themselves a little too challenged by point and clicks, because this one is a lot more accessible than the usual fare.
Yeah.
Yep.
Sounds good though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's an excellent game. I'm very happy with it.
Awesome. Next game to talk about is called Escape Dude Land, developed by Fluky Machine and Sonka, published by Cubic Games. It's releasing November 30th on the Switch for $9.99. Death and destruction came into Dude Land. This happy and joyful land is going to change. You play as one of Doodlers, a peaceful inhabitant of a happy doodle world, attacked by a merciless monster. There are only two options: run as fast as you can or die. Purnell. God damn.
What?
Purnell just spent so much time on the show that I just instinctively called you Purnell, like a jerk.
Oh, that's okay.
Oh, God. Chris, tell us about Escape Dude Land.
Escape Dude Land. You gotta be all right there.
Yeah, I'm okay. Sorry.
I haven't listened to enough Purnell, otherwise I would go into, like, an impersonation or something. But anyways, so yeah, Escape from Dude Land. So this is a game that is an auto runner game, which if you're familiar with the genre or not, it's basically a platformer wherein your character is uncontrollably moving in one direction, and your job is to get them past the obstacles that pop up in order to get to the end of the level. So the mechanics that this game sort of favors, they actually, interestingly enough, in that ad copy, they didn't mention the third option that you have, and that is to fart on everything. So your little dudes, or doodlers, rather, who, you know, are basically doodled monsters. Everything in this game is doodled. We'll get to that in a second. So they must escape this this terrifying sort of kind of a whale, kind of a tree, just kind of a, you know, monster that was drawn on a piece of scrap paper at some point. And, you know, he moves persistently and is very hungry and wants to eat only your protagonist. So You have to jump over the obstacles in time. Your character can climb straight up things. So, you know, you just kind of handle it in little hops. And, of course, you have the ubiquitous double jump. And then, like I said, there are fart mechanics in the game. So, as you know, with auto runners, you usually don't use the directional pads at all. But on this one, you do. If you either rock the joystick or push the D-pad to the left, provided that you have picked up the power-ups, which are little matchboxes, your character will send a flaming fart towards the monster, which will cause him to fall back a little bit in disgust, like you do. And up will actually create a fart rocket, which will propel you upwards, which will help you clear those, you know, straight up obstacles. And then you have, if you push to the right, then your character will fart rocket forward and, you know, move faster in that direction. So the cool thing about this game is that when you pick up these matches, they stay in your inventory until you use them. There's no amount of deaths or game overs that you can endure that will make you lose the matches. So if you're like me and you've been trying a level like 20 times and you've picked up like four, you know, you're just sitting there playing and playing and playing, like sitting there trying to memorize the level and like get your jumps down and like really nail the platforming thing, you'll look up and suddenly notice you've got like 40 matches. And then you're like, oh, well, I can just use these and that'll help me out. And fortunately, the game doesn't let you just spam them throughout the thing. There's actually a little timer that goes off that, you know, you until that timer goes back down, you can't use your fart rocket again. And you can actually only use the fart defense, that is to say the left fart, only one time per life. The left fart. It's left fart, up fart, and right fart. I mean, that's it makes perfect sense to me.
Beautiful,
yeah. So this game basically, and this is what I like about this game, is that it is so unpretentious. It knows exactly what it is. So when you choose, you know, when you start playing through levels, you have two difficulty options, hard and harder. So, and harder is, of course, locked. So you have to, I think, probably beat the whole game on hard before you can get through harder. And that is going to be a task, let me tell you, because this game is big on difficulty, like any good auto runner would be. But I'm going to divert from that and talk about the aesthetics a little bit. So, yeah, the way this game looks, and I really recommend you take a look at it when you're considering purchasing it, is that it's all of the art in it, it looks like pencil and marker and, you know, things like that on graph paper and on notebook. Like, you can actually see the little blue lines of the graph paper in the background.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, but it uses it's deceptive because it actually uses some pretty fancy like 3D work in order to create like layers and layers of like background going back, each one looking like a different drawing and things like that. And there's often like animated monsters like roving in the background that interfere with the levels in some ways. Like, this game is deceptively beautiful. Like, you know, the art already looks good. It looks really purposely amateurish, like definitely something somebody would have scrawled in a notebook in high school. But like, when you really take a look at it, like, there's so much going on in the game and everything is so like intentional that I really, really admired the aesthetics here. And also the soundtrack is a nice jazzy sort of hokum that utilizes kazoo and, like, you know, washboard and things like that. So very a very plucky, eccentric soundtrack. And I will say, despite the fact that I've played many of these like intentionally horrifying, like, you know, horror based runners, there is actually a stage in this game that legit is scary, which is gives this game a very odd and specific award for most genuinely terrifying platformer to use fart mechanics of 2018.
That's a very specific award.
Yes, but this one takes it. So enjoy that award, guys. I assume guys, I don't know, actually. So anyways, yeah, So back to the actual gameplay. So on top of the game being hard, now it is hard, but everything in it, like, it feels like it's tough but fair, which is a good way a high difficulty game would exist. Like, anytime that you mess up, you know it was your fault. Like, either you didn't anticipate something right or, you know, something like that. And the game's merciful enough in that it gives you 3 lives per checkpoint. And in fact, like I said, the game, you know, is unpretentious, so it actually doesn't even start counting lives until the first checkpoint, because if you game over, then you just start the level over, so why would you count 3 lives for the first bit of it, right?
Yeah.
So you have infinite lives up to the first checkpoint, and then every checkpoint after that, you have 3 attempts that you can make, and I think that's a really good system, because, you know, after 3 attempts, it just takes you back to the beginning of the stage again. So it's not something you can just power through a little bit at a time. You actually do have to play through these levels successfully, but not so successfully. And so the other thing about it is that on top of the intentionally tough levels, you also have beans that you can collect, green beans and yellow beans, I guess gold beans, whatever. And so the actual way that you get a ranking in these stages is by collecting all the green beans. Whereupon they count them up at the end of the stage, and a little, you know, line goes up, and as you collect enough green beans, it actually awards you some gold beans as well. And, you know, you try to get all 3 of the gold beans to get the best score in the level, and the game says that some of the levels require a certain amount of beans to actually pass through, so there's some there's a little bit of a skill lock there. But, you know, that's pretty typical for auto runners. And then with those green beans and gold beans, you can actually purchase things in a little shop that the game has, including other characters and, you know, different power-ups. Of course, you can buy more matches. And in fact, if you are when you go through levels again, as long as you pass the level, any green beans that you've caught in that level, you keep. So you can actually grind for beans if you want, just playing through the early levels. You have to be somebody really sad and pathetic and lonely like me in order to actually want to do that. But, you know, I unlocked a few things that way. And of course you can trade your, like I said, 10 green beans for 1 gold bean. So you don't even have to, like, you know, the gold beans aren't, you know, completely rare. Yeah. So, but yeah.
Well, overall $10. What do you think?
$10. This game is really remarkably well put together. So I would say that if you are a fan of autorunners and you want something a little different and definitely with a worthy, you know, difficulty scale, for sure pick this up, because this is one of the better ones I've played. So, I mean, I really didn't have any complaints about this one either. It's very, very, very well done.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
Next game to talk about is called Cat Tales, developed and published by Falcon Development. It's releasing November 29th on the Switch for $14.99. Become a Cat. Cat Tales is a unique animal simulation RPG. Hunt, fight, explore, and socialize in an expansive open world. Get married, have a litter of kittens, and befriend your neighbors. Chris, what is Cat Tales?
Cat Tales. This one, I believe that you got this one to me before I was able to request it, because I was going to request it. Yes, Cat Tales is an open-ended RPG utilizing a day-night system and a calendar system, much like Harvest Moon or one I've more recently talked about, Little Dragon Cafe. And it stars cats. It's basically a top-down view. The graphics are somewhere between Super Nintendo and PlayStation. Definitely, you know, throwback sprite-based stuff. And, yeah, so the story begins with a, I'm going to say, like, an up-style montage of, you know, a kitten being picked, you know, adopted in a pet store and then, you know, taken home by a little kid who has fun with the kitty, but then they get into trouble and the mom decides to freaking abandon the cat on the side of the road somewhere. So the opening actually made me really sad as a newly converted cat person, I suppose.
Aww.
So I, you know, then, you know, as soon as you, as soon as your cat has accepted his fate, his or her fate, of course, then you are approached by a cat named Coco, who is a black and white kitty, who tells you that now you're living in the wilderness and you should learn how to do things. And then Coco puts you through a whole tutorial thing and actually gives you a home in the nearest cat village. You actually can decide which cat village you want to make your home. And from there, you're actually kind of free to develop your kitty however you like. You have a den to go home to. You have an inventory system whereby you basically have to eat to survive. So you, you know, you learn how to catch different foods. That is to say, you can kill birds, you can kill mice, squirrels, you know, even rabbits. Actually, we used to have a cat that killed rabbits, which was a little bit horrifying. But and you can actually learn how to swim and fish and like all this other stuff, or you can, and you know, the whole thing is done through a skill raising system. So you can actually, when you get enough experience points, there's not really a level system, but when you get enough experience points, you can kind of purchase your next point of skill in a certain certain, you know, area of your, at least for your passive skills, which is to say it's fighting and fishing and, well, your ability to swim, basically, because you have a limited amount of time you can swim. But and that's where you catch fish, which are, of course, amazing for cats. But yeah, fighting, swimming, hunting, and what was the other? God dang it. Ah, there was another. I my mind blanked. Too much caffeine.
Oh, too much caffeine.
Anyway,
too much caffeine.
Cat-fiend. Oh no. Oh, speaking of which, you can actually get catnip in this game, and it's worth a lot of money.
Nice.
So yeah, once you fill up your inventory, you can actually sell off things that that you've collected with a local seller and buyer. That are, you know, they're scattered throughout villages, but there's going to be one in your village. And the currency is actually meows. So I found that adorable. Anyway, so, yeah, you know, you basically hunt for resources. Now, time moves by at about a Harvest Moon pace. Like, it's going to remind you a lot of Harvest Moon if you've played the original, especially. And, you know, once it gets too late, you can keep hunting well into the night. As you know, cats are nocturnal creatures. But the later you stay up, the later you're going to wake up the next day. So, you know, the other cats tend to be up from 8 a.m. till 9 p.m., which is wildly inaccurate for a cat. But, you know, that's still the way this game goes. So, you know, if you choose to be nocturnal, then it's not gonna go that well for you. But anyway... then you learn how to socialize with other cats. They all have a star rating of, like, you know, their affection towards you. You can raise that through giving them gifts. You can find out what gifts they like. Anything from your inventory can be handed to them. And the way it does that is that you basically put the thing in your mouth and then offer it to them.
Oh, God.
like a real cat. And, you can play around with that and, like, apparently, I never got married in this game. I actually didn't really get that far because I was working too much on my badass hunter and fighting skills. And that was the kind of cat I made. Plus, I was trying to save up enough money for a different pelt. So, weirdly, in this game, you can change the color of your fur. And you can purchase new colors from the shopkeeper once you've sold enough stuff to him. So, of course, I made a Wilfred, which involved... getting him a light, you know, a light tabby, orange markings. But there are so many, like, the thing about this game is that it really does have a hearty pelt collecting system. I hate calling them pelts because it makes me think of, you know, fur that's been ripped off of an animal. But they call it pelts, so I kind of have to. But it just changes the color of your cat's fur. And not only can you collect them... because this game came out on Steam a while ago, I want to say at least a year, like a year and a half or so. But anyways, there actually is a section where you can enter a promo code, which you can find online, and it'll actually add more colors to your inventory.
Oh, that's cool.
And And the ones that worked on Steam, I tested it. The ones that worked on Steam now work on the Switch as well. By the way, my actual cat Wilfred is now meowing at me, so he heard me talking about his game. So, yeah, it's basically a whole lot to do. Like I said, once you get kind of set in your ways and you figured out like the way that the game goes, you can actually go to the Sacred Temple, where you find out that Coco is a magical cat who has teleporting powers. And this sort of the actual storyline that the you know, kind of like a main quest line, if you will, that the game opens up for you will begin there. And so you can, you know, choose to pursue that. You actually unlock various things by bringing offerings to the sacred temple, and it tells you specifically, it'll be like two mice and a bunny and a black bunny, you know, things like that. And, you know, once you do that, then it sort of unfolds into this larger story. And, you know, plus there are things like in Harvest Moon, certain days will be set aside for holidays. And so you can go out and socialize with other cats and get to know them. They're always the same cats in the game, and the reason I know this is because in order to find those promo codes for cat pelts, I actually stumbled across what is a pretty dedicated online community for this game. So if you play this game, you can definitely find some other people who are way into this game.
Nice.
They know all the other NPC cats like by heart, and it was really interesting to see. So not only is this a really good game, I think that it interfaces well. It definitely gets you immersed, and it's got great role playing aspects. But it also has a really loving community.
Nice. So overall, yeah. $15. What do you think?
I mean, look, if I have to sell you a cat RPG, you know, $15 is not a deterrent. So if you are a fan of cats and you like open ended RPGs, and you know, you actually, you know, want to get into this thing that clearly people have gotten way into, then I definitely suggest you get this game.
Well, it looks like I'm getting cattails then.
Yeah, I really think you would like it. Like, this is a very Joe game.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, we got one final game to talk about tonight. That is called Trouser Heart, developed and published by Kai Games. Released October 4th on the Switch for $7.99. Unsheath your sword and journey through a realm filled with monsters, traps, and treasures. Defeat monster mobs, slay bosses, hoard treasure, and upgrade your sword, shield, and armor. Follow your trousers to the world's end and claim what is rightfully yours. Chris, what is Trouser Heart?
Trouser Heart. I was surprised to get this game because it came out so long ago. I mean, in new release years.
Yeah.
Like almost 2 months. Anyway, yeah, I was very interested in Trouser Heart, so I'm glad to have gotten to pick it up. So Trouser Heart is it's essentially a brawler, a medieval brawler. And it's almost like a roguelike, but not quite. I'll get to that in a second. So you play the king. I assume his name is King Trouser Heart. I don't know. And you're sitting there sleeping in your castle, you know, having a great time. And then a little goblin comes up and steals your freaking pants, or trousers, sorry. And so you immediately grab your wooden sword and wooden shield and go after him. So this is apparently a king who has really let himself go, because wooden sword and wooden shield, no money and no pants. It's just a sad way to be. So you proceed through these levels that are set up basically where it's like the entrance and then two rooms, and then there'll be a campsite where that will serve as a checkpoint and also a place where you can refill your hearts by banging on this dispenser that just shoots out hearts. And then, you know, like maybe two more rooms and then a boss. And then once you defeat the boss, the game actually has a really a unique shortcut method. That is to say, you go through each room, and each room is like, you know, about a 4x4 grid of squares that you can walk around on. And once you defeat the boss, then the door that you entered in opens back up, and when you run into it, then it takes you all the way back to your castle, and so that you can purchase upgrades by striking the anvil. of smithing. I don't know. But so yeah, you collect coins, gold bars, jewelry throughout the levels, and those are how you purchase your upgrades. You'll have to purchase about 5 upgrades before it actually changes the graphic of the item. So I think it's 5 between the wooden sword and like an iron sword, and then there'll be a gold sword, and then like this kind of really badass looking sword that's made of something blue. I actually don't know what kind of metal is that. And yeah, you can not only upgrade your sword, but you can upgrade your armor, which actually just correlates directly to the amount of hearts you get. It's Zelda-like, you know, Zelda-style hearts, where it just adds more of them. And your shield is actually a kind of, the best I can figure is that the shield will just sometimes block the attacks completely. So no matter how strong the attack, if you're shield is good enough, then there's a higher percentage that you'll just nullify that attack completely. And then your crown, which when you upgrade it, then enemies drop more gold based on a certain percentage. And there are also treasure chests littered all the way throughout this game, and it will, I think, affect those as well. Basically, you just get a bunch more treasure. So, you know, good. Of course, yeah. And I like the crown because it just kind of bounces up and down on the guy's head. And I don't know, it looks, I like the look of it. The look of the whole game, actually, it's kind of like, you know, this game is definitely, they definitely reuse their resources here, because every character in the game that's not a goblin is a brawny man, like with giant shoulders and like the same shape of head. And it's like, whether they're skeletons or dudes with swords or like, you know, anything else, they all like kind of have the same model. It looks like Nintendo, it looks like an HD remake of a Nintendo 64 game in terms of graphics. That's the best way I can think of to describe it. Not a whole lot of polygons, but a whole lot of detail in the polygons. Mm-hmm. But it serves the game really well, especially in portable mode. It looks really good in portable mode. Although I played it mostly on the TV. And actually, so the game has two modes and a modifier. It has casual mode, which is fairly easy, although, you know, I ended up dying a couple of times. And then it has hardcore mode, which is largely the same, but, like, the enemies, you know, do more damage and, you know, it's more hardcore. And then you can choose, I believe on both difficulties, permadeath. So you can turn permadeath on or off. 'Cause if you die without permadeath, then it just takes you back to the beginning of the stage, but you retain all the gold that you've gotten right up to that point. So, and then, you know, if you choose to leave at that point, you can go upgrade your stuff and try again. So utilizing casual without permadeath, I was actually able to clear this entire game within an afternoon.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's got 4 worlds that you can go to. Each one has kind of a theme, although largely all it is just going to different castles with the different rooms and then defeating a boss at the end. And of course, each boss has its own strategy, but they're fairly easy to figure out. It's, you know, in casual mode, it's just a fun brawler, and in the permadeath mode, it's more of a survival type game. What the hell is that cat doing? I'm going to kill him.
Gotta love cats.
Yeah. He's like standing on my bathroom counter where he's not allowed and just staring at me. Like he knows that I'm not going to stop him while I'm
still, you're recording. Still recording. You can't do shit.
All right. He's going to get the spray bottle later.
Nice.
Anyway, so this game, I was able to clear it in an afternoon, and actually I went right into hardcore mode and started playing through it again, and I got through a few levels. So even the hardcore mode is not super hard, and the casual mode is great for people who, you know, it gets a bit challenging towards the end, but it's got a long curve. So, you know, by the end of the game, you're definitely able to, like, hang with it and the new obstacles that pop up towards the end. And, of course, like I said, you can always go back to any level and including every world has two bonus treasure chest levels where it, instead of a boss at the end of the level, it's a treasure chest with a whole bunch of extra loot.
Oh, nice.
And yeah, so you can always go back into any of those and just grind up for more money and then get more upgrades and, you know, sort of a, although there is a cap on the upgrades, obviously, once you get to the top, then you're done.
Yeah.
But yeah, once you get to the final dungeon, like, you know, it's a little difficult, but definitely passable. And of course, there's a big twist ending that I'm not going to reveal, except to say that, you know, the story actually has a bit of a twist to it, which is nice. And then once you beat it, you just have the option of either continuing and going through again, I guess, or just, you know, starting over with another character.
Nice. Well, overall, $8 on it. What do you think?
$8 is definitely worthwhile. I would say for the hardcore roguelike enthusiast, it's going to be too easy. You're just going to, you know, burn right through it. But I think for people who are more into, you know, they want to play, you know, a nice casual brawler that has the option of becoming, you know, difficult, but not as difficult as like your actual hardcore, you know, dungeon crawling type game. This is definitely good. I think it would be a great game for kids, honestly, because there's nothing offensive in it. All enemies just fall over and then sink into the ground. Like, you know,
yeah, it's rated E10, so it is for a younger crowd.
Yeah, like, you know, you're just a guy without his pants on. That's nothing wrong with that. And yeah, it's just a fun, lighthearted game. I think that it's a little brief, and you know, you really have to turn on the difficulty as high as it'll go in order to, you know, really be challenged by it. But I think it was really good, and it's definitely well put together. So I'd say it's worth $8. Yeah.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that is it for this episode. Thanks again to everyone for coming on and doing their thing. Thanks again for Adam Ferrando for coming on, chatting about Demon's Tilt. That is absolutely worth checking out. We'll talk about that again next week on the show. Chris, do you have any final words to end this all?
My cat is actually now trying to attack my keyboard, so...
Nice.
I prefer video game cats. These real cats are stupid.
Cats are dicks.
Yeah.